Yeah, Frank here has got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
Billiard room.
No, not billiard. Not the billiards. It was...
Billiards room.
Come on already. Come on. We call it the...
The place to be.
The place to be. Yes, the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
That's what she said.
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Sick bastard. Get your wig pushed back. By the wig pushed back.
Big in the house.
Still here, never left. Still bluff, more or less. Still pump, bitch.
Young Hova in the house.
Chica. Chris Sipper, six dipper, wrist glitter, nigga. Hold up, love. Every time you see Jigga, man, I'm rolling on dubs. Don't forget about them blaze shit, chopping it up. It's the motherfucking rock, bitch, you hotter than us. J-Ho, about to change my name to J-Peso. But in the meantime, call me where your mates though. On the platinum Yamaha, I got the engine gunning. Throwing it up like liquor on the...
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be Podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero. And with me, as always, is of course my PIC in this hot, balmy, sticky, muggy night. That is Scott Criscola. Scott, how you doing?
Good evening, JR. It is always a pleasure to talk to you, sir. It is, can you feel the heat?
Yes, definitely. Jeez. I step out of my basement into the garage, and I was like, get smacked in the face.
Yeah, no, it's like that here in Connecticut. Pretty much the entire Northeast. Me like this tomorrow as well. Welcome, everyone, to episode 135 of the Place to Be Podcast. Tonight, we're going to delve into some uncharted waters yet again.
Mm-hmm.
Last week, as you know, we premiered our, I don't know what to call them. I'm trying to think of a snazzy name for the summer for our special, like our specialty vaults. Something, you know, fancy schmancy. We'll have to come up with that. But last week we did something very different. We did, we of course did Beyond the Mat with the two of us. And of course the man who probably wears the PTB gnome, Jordan Duncan. Got some good feedback on it. We thank all of you in PTB Nation for commenting. Tonight, a little bit more... A little bit more normal, I guess, a little bit more streamlined. We're actually going to do our first actual wrestling program ever. And fortunately, I think Mr. Belding's... We don't have to open the real vault. We'll do that tomorrow night.
Yes.
So he's nodding. He's napping. Do you have a clip? Do you want me just want to just start?
Yeah, I think we should just start.
So. We'll dive in. Okay. Tonight on the Place to Be podcast, we are going to go back in time. We're going to go to the summer to kind of go along with what we're sitting in here in the Northeast. Because we're kind of in this 1996 mode, as we are with our regular vault, vintage vaults, we're going to do a very special edition tonight of the opposition.
Yes.
To what we normally do. As tonight we are going to go to a very memorable episode of WCW Monday Nitro.
Right, and when we talked last week on WWF In Your House International Incident, at the end of the show, we talked about the birth of the NWO, the New World Order, which happened on July 7th, 1996. So what we decided to do, we got all kind of jazzed up, and for our first non-movie summer vintage show we're going to deliver, it is the Nitro from July 8th, 1996, the night after the New World Order was formed, the night after Hulk Hogan had turned heel and joined Scott Hall and Kevin Nash. Of course, then we are emanating... from the MGM Studios in Orlando, Florida, with the cool outdoor arena. And I think they were there for, it was either a month or two. They're there straight, and some memorable shows happened here. So.
Yep, yes. And we're not going to bother getting to, obviously there's no buy rate, and everybody was there for free.
No.
So attendance is irrelevant as well. So, But it is July 8th, 1996, live from the from MGM, as my PIC said, in Orlando, Florida. So what we're going to do is we're going to, for those of you, if you have this episode, you know, somewhere in your vast vault of, I mean, knowing our PTB Nation, I'm sure people have a myriad of tapes.
Or it is it is definitely available on YouTube. Our buddy Steve Willey watched it earlier before he gave us feedback, and he let us know that it is available on YouTube as well. So if you do want to fire it up while you're listening to the show.
Okay, so why don't we do this? Why doesn't everybody get ready and cue up your tape or clip on YouTube or whatever to the shot right before the fire starts going down the street at the beginning of the show.
And just to let everyone know, we're going to try and do things a little bit differently. Beyond the mat, we kind of more observed and just kind of cracked jokes and commented on what's happening. Here, we're going to go a little more traditional. We're going to give a little bit of play-by-play mixed in with our comments, almost as like a play-by-play color situation. So we're basically going to be providing live commentary for you. And if we'll see how this goes, and if anyone has feedback, again, positive or negative, let us know, and we'll decide if we should mix it up going forward.
Yeah. Yeah, we expect, as JR mentioned, all sorts of feedback. So don't get nervous if you say, "Wow, you guys sucked at it."
Right.
Tell us.
Yeah.
Be nice about it. But but you know, tell us. Hey, you know, Wilkie, to Wilkie's credit, he my pause stopped. I got to back up.
Yeah, me too.
to Wilkie's credit, he was a little skittish about the
Mike Wilkinson. You're saying now, not Steve Willie. We don't want to.
Wilkie. I said Wilkie, not Willie. Wilkie. Wee Willie Wilkie. Sounds like a kid's movie. No, Wilkie was a little...
Sounds like Derek LaRue's Saturday Night.
Woohoo! He was a little, you know, a little skittish about us doing Beyond the Mat, and he admitted that he said that it was a little tough to listen to without the movie. And that's absolutely fine, and he's probably right.
Yeah.
I laugh my butt off, but then again, I mark out for our own stuff. I'm a mock for our own.
And this might be a little bit different, because like I said, we'll give more of the play-by-play. We're not going to be sitting just kind of commenting. So why don't we get started, though, because we got a long night ahead of us.
Yes.
So if you get your remote controls ready, or your mice ready, we'll click play. Scott, I guess I'll count us down. 3, 2, 1. VCR might be a little slower than yours, hopefully not.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Well, no, mine was a little
slow. I see Hulk Hogan ripping a shirt, dropping a leg.
There's the traffic lights blowing up.
Okay. No, so, I think we're in a good spot. So I always dug this little opener nitro. Always got me a little bit fired up. But
it got dated. But
yes, because dated very quickly.
Yeah, they still had Hogan in the open in 1998 with his red and yellow. So there we go. Live.
Yeah, and I thought this was a really cool setup. I like the outdoor MGM. It's light right now, and I know it gets dark as the show goes on, which is just a really unique look. I'll give WCW this. They always had unique ideas like this, whether it's Road Wild or Bash at the Beach when they had it on the beach, and now at the MGM studios here. So, of course, Tony Schiavone and the living legend Larry Zbyszko will be heading up Hour 1. Now, this is just about 6 weeks into the two-hour experiment. That was in mid-May when they switched to 2 hours. I don't even know how to describe Tony Schiavone's hair right now. It's very.
It's not too bad right now, and he's not as sausagey looking in the polo as he would be in a couple of years.
No,
but and Larry's just Larry. I think Larry got cooler as he got older.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know. I'm one of the few I think that actually enjoyed Larry's commentary.
I like this too. The New World Odor. He milked that for about 2.5 years.
Oh, I know, right? The New World Odor. Schiavone's still rambling on here. So, Scott, now, I know we talked about this briefly, but you didn't see Bash at the Beach live, right? The turn?
I did.
Oh, you did. Okay, you did.
No, I did see it live. Right. My audio was, okay, I'm just fixing my audio here a little bit. Okay. Yes, I did actually watch it live. I watched the Hogan heel turn live. I was at my friend's house, me and our good friend Dr. G and a couple other people watched it, and I was floored. What do you say? I mean... It was as I thought about it that night, I kind of, you know, had it spinning in my head like, you know what? Probably a good idea.
Oh, yeah, because his face, you know, by 95, his face run out of gas. Forget it by early 96. And now, just quickly, we're getting clips here. Rey Mysterio defeating Psicosis at Bash of the Beach, and Dean Malenko retained his Cruiserweight title against Disco Inferno. We're getting some still photographs here from the night before.
Were you a big... Glenn Gilberti fan?
Hey, he's all right. I thought he was funny enough as Disco Inferno. I can't say I was like a mega fan of his, but I thought he was entertaining in the role. I was a big Dean Malenko fan, though. I will say that.
Yes, I think a lot of people were. I remember him and Eddie Guerrero with their awesome series in ECW earlier this year.
Yes.
Late 95, early into 96.
Late 95, yep.
So, yeah, I mean, those were awesome. So I knew about Malenko. Mm-hmm. I didn't know a lot about him before he was in ECW, but...
Yeah, so now we're headed to the ring. David Penzer bringing out Rey Mysterio Jr. for our opening matchup here. Cruiserweight title will be on the line, Scott.
Yes.
So a big opener here.
Big opener here.
Now, Rey had only been around for about a month in WCW here. Of course, he broke in at the When Worlds Collide pay-per-view with AAA in late 95, signed up with ECW after the loss. You know, Paul Heyman had to kind of replenish things after he lost Malenko and Eddie and Benoit and those guys. He restocked with some Cruiserweights and Rey and Psicosis, and then they were the next ones to go. So he had been here just about, I think, a month. I think his first pay-per-view was Great American Bash, and then he faced Psychosis at Bash of the Beach the night before this show.
And there was a big exodus in early 96. Mm-hmm. Mick Foley obviously left ECW as well. Obviously, late 95, Steve Austin left. So this little stretch was Brian Pillman. So this little stretch was tough for Paul. But he rebounded because 97 would end up being one of his best years ever. So
yeah, so he was always good at restocking when he needed to. So
yep, there we see the WCW Cruiserweight Champion, the Man of 1,000 Holds. The Iceman, Dean Malenko. Tremendous competitor.
Okay, so he actually, Mysterio did make his debut at the Great American Bash, and he actually faced Dean Malenko. Malenko cheated to win and retain, and then Ray earned this shot here by defeating Psychosis at Bash at the Beach. So this is his
second title match. One thing I got to say about these crowds, whether they were any from wrestling fans or not, and I bet you this is kind of what TNA does now. Mm-hmm. At least people get excited, even if it's like fake excitement. At least they care, you know, and they kind of get into it.
Well, this I'm curious if this was more like something fans would attend more than, you know, TNA is set up to be more of a attraction at the park. I don't know if this was necessarily that way. This is almost like an event at the arena at the park. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, well, we'll see. I'll be curious. Maybe, you know, we'll have to track the crowd as we go throughout the night. So, quick action already. Dean charges there. Ray catches him with a knee and then goes for a victory roll into a head scissor takedown. So, already, I mean, Ray's speed is just unbelievable right here. So, let's see. This is 1996. He was born in 1974. So, he was only 22 at this point.
Yeah.
Not even 21 because his birthday's in December. So,
and Dean's probably in his early 30s, early mid 30s, I would think. Probably.
I'll tell you in one second, but I mean, Mysterio just flying around the ring at this point. Yes. And you know, Malenko gives the credit to him. He was hanging right with him. Malenko was born in 1960, so yeah, he was 36 at this point.
36. So he was already on the bat, but I mean, obviously, exceptional physical, nice knee to the gut there. Yeah. And now he's gonna do a nice. Try to go for a regular suplex. Oh, couple of reversals there, and oh, nice move. He reverses a Dean catches a flip, but then gets thrown into the turnbuckle. I'm trying to remember JR. Obviously, 6 years later, Rey Mysterio would, of course, debut in WWE. Did they ever call him Junior?
No.
Or the minute he debuted on that SmackDown, he was automatically just Rey Mysterio.
I don't think
they ever used it Junior.
I don't think so either. I mean, he uses it pretty much throughout most of his WCW run.
Yeah.
He gets a near fall there off a springboard splash, and now looks like a little bit of a botch, but they played it off well. So the trading near falls, Malenko, Mysterio, and again, the quickness here shown by Mysterio is unbelievable. Malenko hangs right with him. Definitely a breath of fresh air. You know, we had seen some smaller lightweight guys, and WCW themselves had a lightweight division in the early 90s. But it was guys that were a little bit bulkier, a little bit bigger. So to see a guy of Ray's stature doing what he was doing was really crazy on the U.S. soil, on our mainstream. Like, I know we had seen 1-2-3 Kid a couple years earlier when he debuted in WWF. And he was doing some crazy stuff, too, and even Hakushi the year before this. But to see guys like Mysterio and Psychosis start going at it was really, you know, kind of mind-blowing at the time.
Oh, 2 count there by Dean. He snapped off a nice tilt-a-whirl backbreaker a few moments ago and then ripped off a nice
belly-to-belly.
Yeah. Belly-to-belly suplex, and now he's doing that bow and arrow move where you pull the arms. It's very rare here because Dean, obviously bigger than Ray, not by much. Mm-hmm. He's probably got maybe, 25 pounds on him probably, maybe 30 pounds on him.
Right.
So it's very unique Dean to face a guy really smaller than him.
Right,
so
and he really tosses him around, and we'll see that, I think, as this match goes on a little bit more, and Ray really, you know, flies around for him, and Dean does look like a powerhouse when he faces Mysterio. I think that added to their chemistry. So we took a quick commercial break there. We're back now, and the action's picked up a little bit. Dean tosses Ray high up into the air off an Irish whip, and he smashes to the mat. And, you know, the crowd, a little bit pro-Malenko here, a little bit, not too much. I think they're still behind Mysterio, but Malenko hadn't really been given a reason, you know, for people to hate him at this point. He's just kind of a machine-like assassin almost. So, and he hits a powerbomb there for a 2 count again. Mm-hmm. What did you think of Nick Patrick, our referee here? You're a Nick Patrick fan?
Nick was a fine referee. You know, he's kind of a NWA / WCW stalwart. Of course, he would eventually envelop himself into the NWO storyline down the line. My question to you, JR, is where do they get these hideous looking people sitting in the front row? My God.
Yeah, it's those might be the special needs group. You might want to slow your roll. Yeah, he made a slay roll. This is Rey Mysterio. They did drop the junior when he debuted with WWE. So
okay, so the junior was gone. Speaking of the Mysterio family, my good friend Mr. Johnny Reckless and I one night were watching the movie Wrestle. I think it was called Wrestle Killer, Wrestle Horror. It was a horror movie involving a masked wrestler who was killing people in Mexico, and the actor that played this murderous serial killer wrestler in a mask was Rey Mysterio Sr.
Right. Yeah. Well, the luchadors down there, the wrestlers down there, were all movie stars as well. I mean, they're like legitimate mainstream stars down there. Of course, Santo was the big one down in Mexico. And I don't profess to be any kind of Mexican wrestling expert as Mike Tenay is, but
yes,
he. I do know that they are big, pretty big stars down there.
What other guys? Dr. Wagner Jr. and,
yeah,
and all those kind of guys.
Dos Caras,
yeah. So Rey gets tossed out of the ring here. Obviously, he didn't have his flaring pants at this point yet. He still had like regular long tights.
Yeah, they almost make him seem smaller.
Yes, that is true. And he is smaller, actually. Obviously, he bulked up
significantly.
By like 2000, what? Like 2004, probably.
I'd say by 2000, even when still in WCW, he was bulking up. I think by the turn of the decade or turn of the century, I guess he was already starting to build up a little bit. And by the time he shows up in WWE, he's already pretty built. And then it would just escalate from there. But
now he was one of the ones we talked about this earlier today. As Dean's got a little body scissor action going on here, trying to take the breath out of Rey. This is for the Cruiserweight Championship.
I think it's our Donovan in the front row. I'm not going to lie to you.
The one with the neck brace?
No, the one two over. He's leaning over, cheering on Ray.
Oh, that guy. Oh, there he is. How much does that guy weigh? He's looking for Gorilla.
Hey, Gorilla, how much does this lady next to me weigh?
Oh, I don't know, Art. About three bills?
Yeah, I like that. That guy, second right above him, two rows deep. He's got a hell of a mustache mullet combo going.
Excellent. All right, so Dean decides to bring it outside. WCW with their classic fire and flames padding on the outside.
Yeah, I mean, this is going
to... Well, I wish I could have gone to one of these. I've never been to one of these outdoor things. It would have been pretty cool.
Brainbuster on the floor. Nasty move by Malenko. And I, you know, watching this always gets me all jazzed up and a little bit sad, too, because it makes me realize how much I do miss Nitro. It's just such a different look and feel. You know, they really did make it... did a good job making themselves a true alternative to WWF. You know, TNA, it's something they've tried to do over the last 10 years, but have come up a little bit short. WCW never seemed, at least until, you know, Vince Russo jumped over and things got out of control. But during their heyday from, you know, 94-ish to about 98, they seemed very different, very unique. And their style of the presentation of the program was different. And even a lot of the match structures were different as well. So
going for the pin here is Dean.
Yeah, he's dominated the middle part of this match, right? Hanging in. Yeah. But and it's not just basic offense. I mean, he's working in some rest holds and submissions, but it's a lot of high impact, stiff assault he's using here. Now Rey reverses a pump handle slam into a two count as well, so he's starting to mount a little bit of a comeback.
And too busy trying to find the mustache mullet guy. Well, as we're getting that camera shot, I have to double check that again.
You know, it's not a surprise too that they brought in Mike Tenay eventually as well to do these kind of matches and just the whole program in general, because you know, Tony and Zbyszko are a little bit overmatched, I think, with this match. And Rey totally misses.
Miss that badly, yeah.
Yeah, in a springboard somersault. Moonsault, rather, onto the floor.
Splat
on the floor, and Dean still kind of sold it a little bit. But, you know, Tony could call a match, and he could hang. He knew his moves, but he was definitely a little bit in over his head on some of this.
Do you ever wonder, JR, why, you know, because we're in the summertime now. I can understand the winter because, you know, WWF still almost was semi-regional when it comes to, like, Raws and stuff. You ever wonder why Vince never tried an outdoor Raw?
Yeah, I don't know.
You know, I'm just curious because it does add a kind of a special feel to it.
Oh, definitely. I think there's a great idea. Now, right off the top with a head scissors takeover and I guess an air fall there as well. Now, the crowd's really heating up here getting behind Rey, but I'm not sure why he never tried it. You know, he's always big into being the first to do things. I'm surprised he hadn't done it. But I agree. It added a lot of special feel, and this is just a really cool atmosphere. And it makes these episodes memorable because when you picture certain things, you picture the open air. And, you know, the way the ring is set up here with the stands as well. So Rey with another near fall, climbing the ropes here. Dean cuts him off with a headbutt.
We're getting into, like, the sprint portion of the match now, yes, where they're just going move.
And this is one of my – look at those short shorts in the crowd. This is one of my favorite moves of all time out of Dean Malenko, where he picks a guy up on his shoulders on the top rope and comes off with a gourd buster, stomach breaker down to the mat. One of my favorites. And, of course, he picks up Rey there. He had him beaten. Picks him up at two, starting to be a little smug. Scott, did you catch the guy in the tiny blue shorts of the crowd?
Yes, I did see that. It's, yes,
not great. A pretty sight.
Oh, look at that tall dude with the funny looking, I don't know what kind of blue shirt that is. Another guy with a mohawk.
There he is. This is it's purple shorts. You watch him in the upper right corner if they pan that way. He's got a red shirt on.
Red shirt.
Dean again picks up Ray, this time after kind of a belly-to-belly throw. Yeah. So
Dean's like where this match might be going. He keeps doing this.
Yeah, I mean, Dean's really dominated pretty much all this match, and you know what happens usually when you refuse to put a guy away. So we'll see if it backfires on him.
I'm surprised Ray's mask wasn't starting to fall off because he didn't turn up. Oh, turn around. Two, and there it is.
Rey Mysterio, your new Cruiserweight champion. Dean whipped him into the rope, and he went for kind of like a... I don't even know what he was going to do. Kind of a back salto kind of thing. And then Ray just flipped it into a victory roll and rolled over onto Malenko and picked up the win. Now, I'm not doing it anything near justice there. So,
no, you definitely have to take a look at it. So there you go. His first North... is that the guy with an Aladdin puppet? Is that what that is?
It's the genie from Aladdin, yes. And he must have bought it while shopping at MGM, I'm guessing, or at Disney.
Yeah, I'm doing so.
So yeah, he shoots Ray in. He goes for a tilt-a-whirl. Ray turns it into a hurricanrana, and he hooks Dean's legs for the pin. There's the Pep Boys Power Pin of the Week brought to you there. So Rey Mysterio with his first WCW gold. And Dean Malenko is now an angry man who did not take advantage of the opportunity. Now we go to Mean Gene interviewing the Nasty Boys and the Steiner Brothers.
Yes. What they're talking about right now, JR, is later on in the night, these two will meet in a number one contenders match. And the winner of this match, I got this info courtesy of our man Graham Cawthon of the history of WWE.com. These two will face the winner of this match later on tonight on Nitro will face the will get a WCW tag team title shot at Hogwild, I guess.
Okay, yeah, still so Hogwild.
Hogwild. So I'm trying to remember who the champ was. Was it Harlem Heat? Were they the champs?
I believe Harlem Heat were still the champions. Yes. And now the set they're still using here, yeah, this is still proto early Nitro, because as the year would go on and into 97, they really cut out all backstage interviews and pretty much did everything in the arena. Here we're back in the little locker room setup with the Nasty and Steiners drawing.
Yeah, the fake bricks.
Yeah. So Nasty's still hanging around. Their strong year is 94 and into 95. Here in 96, they start to feel a little bit stale in the tag division. Is WCW in 96 into 97 would really, really load up on tag teams. And, you know, we talked about the dearth of tag teams in the WWF at this time.
Yeah.
And, yes. You know, things were very substantially different in WCW. They had a loaded tag division. It would stay that way for a while. Mm. And they put focus on it. You know, they used to they'd have multiple tag matches a night, usually.
Chris Jericho said on the, I don't know if it was on the Rise and Fall of WCW DVD or his DVD. He goes, if you took WCW's mid-card and WWF's main events, you actually had an awesome product.
Right.
Because he thought the mid-card, including him, was unbelievable, but obviously the main events were clogged with a lot of junk. Meanwhile, in WWF, you had the awesome main events, which were pretty good in 96, but then, of course, really kick in 97, which, of course, we will document.
Right.
But the mid-card still was a little bit to be desired still. Still had to flesh out some of the dead weight, but... So there's Mean Gene cutting a big promo.
Yeah, pretty basic stuff there. This is the two teams.
There we are. Second.
Coming up. Horseman.
History made by that man, the Nature Boy Ric Flair, the previous night at Bash at the Beach. I'll tell you what in a moment, unless they show it here. Let's see if they show it. Oh, no, the Encore. JR, make sure you get the Encore Tuesday night.
Viewer's choice, 5 to 8 p.m. Request 1, 8 to 11 p.m. Call your local cable operator.
I wonder what they charged for the Encores.
I think it was the same price.
I think that's a bunch of crap. I've always had an issue with that. Why you charge the same price for the Encore? I never liked when WWF did it too. They should make it like half off or knock off $10 or something. Mm. I mean, really, that's ridiculous.
Well, you're still getting the same presentation though.
Yeah, but it's already old by then. You already know what happened, and I don't know. Figure if you want to spike purchases of the Encores, you should knock it down a little bit. You'll still get a decent rate.
I guess.
So I don't know. Once you already know what happened and everything, I don't know. Just a thought. I think the pay-per-views in 96 were they, 30?
I believe so.
Oh, look at this beef coming down the ramp.
It comes Jimmy Hart leading a couple members of the Dungeon of Doom out. Big Bubba and Hugh Morris.
Yep.
Big Bubba rocking this kind of motorcycle helmet thing he's got going
look
on.
Him. He's pretty good shape, Big Bubba.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Not looking too bad. Hugh Morris, of course, always a little on the beefier side.
Yes.
Bill DeMott. Although, I don't know, should Bubba should be wearing those funny, those leather pants? I don't know.
yeah, this is Dungeon of Doom was still kind of going, it was running on fumes a little bit here. It actually lasted into 97, but they weren't the strong, powerful faction that they were in 95 into 96 when they were feuding with Hulk Hogan and Macho Man. Here, they're just kind of just another stable, basically.
Yeah, they're pretty much like third in the – well, they probably were second in the pecking order. Ah, here we go. A couple of my favorite dudes right here.
Yes, the Blue Bloods.
Yes.
Lord Steven Regal, Squire Dave Taylor, led out by Earl Robert Eaton
and
Jeeves.
Jeeves, yes.
Now, talk about it, – it's funny because they were a great gimmick, really funny, but they also seem a little bit dated here into this era, and you still have these guys coming out doing this Blue Blood gimmick.
Well, what's unfortunate is you're dealing with three exceptional wrestlers too.
Definitely. It was a great – I thought it was a good stable. I mean, Eaton was always the best in a tag team, and he kind of fit as the third guy, just kind of – there to stand in the back. Yeah, Elder Statesman, exactly, and take care of business in the ring. And Taylor, they all fell behind Regal as the leader, so.
So who were the faces here? I'm assuming that the Blue Bloods were baby faces?
No,
here?
Neither were.
Oh, so it's just two heels. That was another thing that WCW did a lot of. They didn't.
Yes.
Oh, some highlight. Let me just mention that last. Oh, there's your man.
John Tenta with his half-shaved hair. This is the infamous Carson City Silver Dollar match with the Silver Dollars in the sock hanging up. Jimmy Hart scale the pole. Retrieved the sack, but John Tenta was able to get it from him, clock Big Bubba, and pick up the win there to end that feud that had been raging throughout 96. But
one of your J-faves right there, John Tenta.
Yes, Mr. Tenta. The late, great John Tenta.
Yes, exactly. What I was going to say was WCW did this often. They just would throw guys in there to kill time. Could be four heels, four faces.
Yes.
You know, Vince and the writers in WWF didn't really do that very often. They were still very kayfabe-ish, and they had every right to be. It's not a knock. I'm just saying it just seems like WCW was a little more experimental with doing things like this, just to put on a good match for, 5 or 6 minutes. But easily Dave Taylor and Steve Regal.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird not calling him William Regal. Nothing to sneeze at. Exceptional wrestlers, and there's, of course, Earl Robert Eaton.
And starting to get into a twilight here at MGM.
Yes, sun's starting to set.
Yes.
In beautiful Orlando. You see the ocean off in the distance. I don't know what direction, if that's the Gulf of Mexico or if that's the Atlantic Ocean. Not sure what direction. Let me see. Orlando, I guess, would be the Atlantic Ocean. So, again, the crowd, probably about 600. Not huge, but back then, and this would end up probably being WCW's downfall, money never fazed them. They didn't care about ticket sales. They were all about TV ratings. They wanted to make sure the show was watched by you. The people in the crowd, they were relevant. They were just there to fill space and make noise. It was all about making sure this Nitro did better in ratings than Raw did. Mm-hmm. That's all they cared about. And I think that would come back and bite them in the ass, 4 years later.
Yes and no.
Well, it would be one thing, because if they had actually made some money and didn't have to give the tickets away 3 years later, then maybe they would have had...
but the problem wasn't that. I mean, I think they could have sustained the crowds if they kept a good product up. The problem is the product got stale because they were so dominant and so on top, they didn't want to change anything. They were afraid to change anything. They panicked, and they let things linger on and linger on. They never elevated any new fresh blood, and before you knew it, people just started tuning out because it was just the same old thing, and... the fans never got sent home happy because the heel stable always won for a while. And then, they started botching booking the end of 97 to 98. So we won't get into all that here. But
no,
I think that played more of a role than, a couple live shows a year, free shows a year.
Bubba's, maybe they're not real leather because they easily tore up. So they must be like cheap poly leather or something.
And Regal kind of schooling him a little bit, takes him down with a single leg and then a little forearm rub to the face and near fall, but Boss Man comes back with a big side slam. Oh, I thought that was going to be it already.
You would have been scolded by the brass. You just called him Big Boss Man.
Did I really?
Yeah. You would have been scolded by Stanley, Dr. Harvey there.
Schiller?
Harvey Schiller.
Oh, wow. It just kind of. I was thinking Boss Man Slam. I think that's why I said it. Here comes John Tenta. He shoves Jimmy Hart down, and now him and Big Bubba are brawling on the floor. Now, Tenta had the half-shaved hair, half-shaved mustache and beard. That was because that's what Big Bubba had done to his face, and he left it that way. So I guess that feud's not over. Double backdrop suplex, and the Blue Bloods pick up the win as Squire Dave pins Hugh Morris, and they get the win there. So you can thank John Tenta for the assist. And also Earl Robert was involved in the finish there as well.
Yes. Big Bubba was actually looking good. He almost looked younger here than he did during some of his Big Boss Man run.
Mm-hmm. He's an odd guy. He had the Benjamin Button thing going on. He seemed to get younger and better as the years ticked away.
You know, I'm a big Dave Taylor mark. I kind of miss him. I liked when they had that team together in late 06.
Mm.
I was kind of digging that grizzled, old, you know, stiff, you know, European uppercut forearm team.
And that was a cool thing with WCW, too. Again, our replay here. But they had different guys from all around the world, and they used them differently. You know, they had the European guys were all stiff and bitter, and they all had their feud going on. Then you had the cruiserweights had their thing going on, and you had the guys from Japan all doing their thing, and you had the... You know, the guys from the indie scene doing their thing, and then you have the main eventers doing their thing, and the tag teams were up to something in their division. So it was like every little grouping had a focus and characters, and they had a nice mix of talent. So I liked this whole thing with Taylor and Regal and Finley and, you know, these brutish Europeans beating the shit out of each other.
I enjoy it. I agree. Well, coming up after the break, we're going to have a little Psychosis action. Psychosis losing to Rey Mysterio at Bash at the Beach the night before. Yep, there's a commercial. And hey, guess what? We're back here on Monday Nitro.
Yeah, right back. I like this. No commercials.
Yeah, this is awesome.
Yes.
Probably they weren't making any more. TNT wasn't probably making much on it anyway. Oh, another guy that would become one of the greatest of all time. Wearing my favorite. Are those my favorite tights? Yes, they are. My favorite tights. Eddie Guerrero with the awesome white and red combo. Taking on Psychosis, so you know this match is going to be fairly awesome.
Yes, and no entrance already. They're still kind of just floating around here as a lower mid-card. Not really a full cruiserweight, but kind of.
Right.
And still a face here. We got an inset promo from Rey Mysterio. I guess he got changed pretty quickly. He's already has a tight black t-shirt in the back here. Talking about his title shot with Dean Malenko.
He looks like somebody with the t-shirt and the mask. He kind of looks like he'd be in our man RJ Brewer's Lucha Libre USA.
Yes. Also, he looks like a fan like on Public Access or something that bought a mask and threw it on.
Of course, Ray just became Cruiserweight Champion, so this is obviously a big match for him, big match for him to watch. Could be a future number one contender.
We have Eddie wearing down Psychosis on the left side here while Ray talks on the right side. Eddie with a near fall off a reversal from a submission into a roll-up. So.
Yes.
Kind of at a stalemate here early as the sun continues to set in our third match here on the July 8th, 1996 episode of Nitro. One night after Bash at the Beach, and of course the big stuff is still to come. The first promo of the New World Order officially on Nitro.
Yes, that'll be coming up in a little bit. Of course, if you flip, if there were commercials, you would have flipped on. Would you have flipped on USA? I don't know if it was Raw on yet.
No, because Nitro was 8 to 10, and Raw was still 9 o'clock at this point.
Okay, so Raw is not on yet. So this hour probably didn't do too bad. A couple of nice tilt-a-whirls there. Nice reversal. Little leapfrog there by Eddie. Or I can't even explain what these are. Where's Tanae when you need him? I don't even know what
you're doing your best mid-90s Vince McMahon impression.
I know,
what a maneuver!
What a maneuver! And Psychosis just crotched himself on the lowest rope.
Were you a Psychosis fan? What did you think of him?
I didn't think he was a bad wrestler. I can't understand. It must be tough, particularly in this weather, trying to wrestle in all that crap. I mean, that's a lot of hair. Mm. Was that even his hair? Or was that part of the mask?
I believe it was part of the mask. I don't think it was his hair. Because once when he finally unmasks. Oh, actually, I don't know. I think it's part of the mask. I think when he finally unmasks, his hair is not obviously like that. So.
Yes. And of course, the crowd always chanted, "Put your mask on, poor guy."
Yes. Not the most handsome.
He was an exceptional talent. He was a good pickup for WCW to try and really bolster that mid card of cruiserweights. That was the one thing. At this point, you know, Bischoff and the guys back, they had some foresight. I'll give him credit for that. Vince was he was trying, but unfortunately, he was still. Very skittish. He wasn't looking outside the box. We've been talking about this on our last few regular Vintage Vaults, and we'll get more into it, of course, this week when we do our SummerSlam 96 vault. But at least WCW just seemed very, you know, as much as they didn't want to embrace the Crockett era, they still were doing it in the sense they were very, you know, they were open-minded with trying new things and signing these guys. And I'm sure none of these guys came cheap. Because, you know, they were established.
Right.
Eddie takes advantage of the long hair to keep the headlock on. What about you? Were you a Psychosis guy?
Is that the tangent we got off on? he was okay. He was never my favorite of the Cruiserweights. But, you know, he was solid. He worked hard. And he actually got better as the years went on. And they put him with a manager and kind of made him more of a defined heel. That was one issue I always had with the Cruiserweights. He never really knew what they were. You know, they just kind of were guys that went out there and wrestled.
Yeah.
I liked when they started to give him a little character and put them in stables and different things like that. And you kind of knew who lied where. Right. But for the most part, they kind of morphed back and forth. Nice corkscrew moonsault off the top to the floor, crashing down onto Eddie Guerrero. His mullet spraying across the mat.
Yes. Now, as for Psicosis's opponent, I was an Eddie fan from the minute I saw him in ECW.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable talent. That's where Paul was a genius, and because you know, a lot of people that may not know a lot about the really inner workings of ECW were probably like, well, why would he get all these? You know, I thought they were just trash can throwers and glass eaters, and you know, and knocking right. up hookers on the roof or whatever. And no, Paul knew that, you know, these guys appreciated good wrestling, and they did a great job, you know, mixing in when Chris Benoit was there and then Eddie Guerrero and obviously Dean Malenko. He wasn't dumb, Paul. He might have been a little, probably didn't know how to balance a checkbook, nor could he be very kempt in the hygiene department. But the guy knew his wrestling. Right. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, he knew what the fans wanted, like you said. And, you know, he was able to scout these guys, and coming off that AAA show, he brought them in, and you know, he had the relationship with Conan going on. Then Conan jumped to WCW, and eventually the Luchadors followed him over there as well. He got them a deal.
Yeah.
So,
Psicosis throws Eddie into the corner, and Eddie hits his shoulder on the post.
Yeah, working the arm here. You know, pretty different kind of cruiserweight match for this time. It's a little bit slower, and Psicosis doing some more mat work, and they're working body parts, and not the fast, high flying nonstop stuff we come to know out of the cruiserweights. And kind of like, well, even earlier, I guess that match was a little slower than the normal as well. So
Artadano looks like he's heckling somebody there in the
yeah, he's been very active out here in the front row.
How much do you weigh, mask dude?
Gorilla, how can he see with that mask on?
Oh jeez. Now, I'm gonna lay it on the line. I've not been to Disney World, or I haven't been to Orlando in a long time. You've been there more recently than me. Where was this in compare? Have you ever been to MGM down there?
I think it was only in MGM once, maybe twice, but I'm not sure, honestly.
Okay, I was just curious. I don't, you know, I'm sure maybe a lot of our listeners who've been down there maybe know where this is later. I don't have a clue, so I've just and Psicosis continuing to work the arm over.
Yeah, again,
you and I got to be more girl and Bobby. Should we talk about the Rosati sisters or a little Miss Betty action going on here?
The LaRue sisters.
Little and the cat. Where's Roland when you need him?
Psicosis playing to the crowd, trying to get them involved a little bit here, working over Eddie Guerrero's arm. Eddie at this point, a little underutilized. He kind of started off a little bit strong in late 95, but since then he's kind of faded back a little bit. And here he does the same move Rey Mysterio did earlier, but he does not get the pin. He only gets a two count, the Hurricanrana into the roll-up.
An excellent match.
Yeah.
Excellent match.
Well worked, I'll say that. I mean,
good TV match.
Yep,
yes.
No blown spots, no missed, you know, everything. And blown spots to me are fine if you play them off that way. Because in a fight that's not choreographed, you have blown spots. So to me, I'm fine when they botch stuff up, as long as they don't try to redo it and make it obvious.
Yeah.
And there, Psicosis is caught coming off the top rope with an atomic drop. So he's down writhing on the mat, and Eddie's kind of hobbling around as well. So pretty good selling here. Shivani, you know, a little fired up. Good to hear.
Yes.
Ooh, you know me. I don't need to make excuses to Shivani. I'm a big Shivani fan. Eddie crashes into the post with that shoulder. Yes. He's been injured throughout the match. Psicosis seats him up on the top rope.
At this point in time, JR, rate for me who had the better commentators, Raw or Nitro, at this point in 96.
Oh, man.
Who did you enjoy listening to more?
I mean, I always liked Vince, but at this point he was really starting to get over the top. I don't know. I like Shivani and Larry, honestly.
Mm.
You know, and then even, you know, Bischoff and Heenan and Tanay. I guess WCW, I think. I like the way they mix their guys in more. Psicosis with a snap powerbomb off. Eddie was on the top rope, and he snapped him down for a two count.
Yes. Yep.
So Eddie hanging in. A lot of time here for this match. Do we have enough? Well, we'll get to it after. We'll get the
I have the history. I have the history of WWE.
We'll save it. After the pin, you can share it with us.
Okay. Wow. Much shorter. I'll just tell you this. Much shorter than I thought.
Oh, okay. So,
After it finishes, I want you to tell me what you help me think of this. Oh, Eddie
with a superplex. Nice move there. And
yes.
I'm guessing this is the finish here. Looks like he's headed up to the top.
See if he hits the froggy frog frog. And there it is.
Boom. I always loved his frog splash. For a move where he's just gliding off the top rope, he always made it look very stiff the way he landed hard on the guy. So Eddie Guerrero picks up the win over Psicosis. Psicosis now kind of a little losing streak going on here. Lost at Bash of the Beach and now again here. So, and he controlled a lot of this match, so a tough loss for him. I'm going to say this clocked in at about 8 and change.
8:34.
Oof, look at that. Right on.
Excellent. See, I was expecting longer.
Well, once you said that, I know you're always off on the long end. So
that's true. This match is about 26 minutes. by the way, mentioned, and this kind of probably upset Nitro viewers, but Rey Mysterio, I guess, mentioned, or it was mentioned when he was in the inset promo, that Hulk Hogan would not be on Nitro tonight. He would show up the following week.
Interesting.
Yes, it says right here. Let me find my place here. Cut a backstage promo with his reaction to Hulk Hogan joining Scott Hall and Kevin Nash the previous night. It was mentioned during the match that Hulk Hogan would appear the following week, and that Psicosis would challenge Mysterio on WCW Saturday night.
Okay. And now we have a Mean Gene interview with Kevin Sullivan and the Giant. I'm going to turn this up a little bit because I know this is an important one. I know throughout the night we get these comments about Hulk Hogan, and Sullivan really brags here because he talks about how he knew this was coming with Hulk Hogan. And Jimmy Hart as well. You know, Gene talking about how he managed Hogan for years. And, you know, did he have it in him or what's going on? Jimmy's saying he's lost for words.
Yes.
Which is funny because he turned on Hogan in late 95 and all of a sudden Hogan turns and he lost for words. But, you know, Sullivan's not surprised. He's saying him and Jimmy Hart live for the destruction of Hulkamania. And that's all they wanted. And, of course, Hogan himself plucked it away from them by ruining Hulkamania himself. And a Giant, by the way, we just kind of tossed him aside. He's the world champion here. He's standing there with the belt. And he is almost like an afterthought, which is kind of interesting, you know, at the dawn of the New World Order. And he is in a great shape, the Giant back there.
Yeah, he is in awesome shape here. Yes, absolutely.
Sullivan talking about the NWO.
And that awesome Boston accent.
Yes. And now we get some footage from Sullivan's match the night before. It was a tag match. Chris Benoit and Arn Anderson against Sullivan and the Giant. A wild brawl. So Giant kind of relegated there as well to a tag action. Gets to speak here, though.
He beat Flair, I believe, didn't he?
Yes. In April, I think.
April, I think. Yeah.
It was on one of the NBA playoff shortened episodes of Nitro. He won the title. So this, he's saying, don't worry about Hogan. Everything's about the Giant. Everything's about the Dungeon of Doom and their title. So, you know, this is the trend throughout the night where there were all these guys commenting on Hogan. And they're really putting it over as a big deal. And it was. It was a major deal at the time.
Absolutely was, yeah.
Giant saying he doesn't have to wrestle tonight. So, and he's laughing that up. And God, there he goes.
So small.
Gene's lost for words himself, and now we're back in the aisle for that interview. We weren't backstage, so
no.
As we head off to break,
head off to commercial. Probably some Pep Boys and I don't know what other TNT advertisers. And guess what? Welcome back, everyone, to Orlando, Florida.
Yes, and it is now time for our big number one contender tag team match. As the Nasty Boys make their way out from Pity City.
Yes,
I always like the Nasty Boys theme song.
I like the WWF version, but you know, does WWF own all this crap now? I just realized that. Do they own the big metal WCW logos?
They must, yeah, right. Didn't they use it in the I think they used it in the Nitro DVD, right, or the WCW one of the DVDs?
Oh yeah, the Best of Nitro. I think you're right. Yeah, I think DDP was standing in front of them. Oh, there's finally some good looking people for once. Good God.
Well, that girl's like 8.
Well, let's say she was ugly. The mom wasn't bad looking. It's better than the Art Donovan's family in the front row.
All right, Sandusky, let's move on.
By the way, he did not testify on his own behalf. Otherwise, I might as well just give him the key and throw him in the Dungeon of Doom.
Yeah, I don't think he's getting out of there anyway. So, all right, here come the Steiner brothers from the University of Michigan, of course, Rick and Scott, making their way down to the ring. Scott, who do you like in this match?
I'm going to go with the Steiners here. Scott and Ricky were on a big run. They were doing well. They were probably the top babyface team in the company at this point, at least one of the top three. And like you said, I think the Nasties were a little,
played out,
kind of laid out and kind of stale. Of course, Booker T and Stevie Ray, Harlem Heat, are your WCW Tag Team Champions.
Now, I don't know if you noticed this while the Steiners were entering. Did you see a Wildcat Willie in the back dancing around, the WCW Nitro mascot?
Yes, I did. I did.
Very exciting.
They had the little corny things that, that you know, still were kind of charming, you know?
Yeah.
By the way, on a side note here, as we look at our man Jerry Sags, for those that watch Man vs. Food Nation on the Travel Channel, there was an episode where Adam Richman, the host, you know, the Man vs. Food Kid, went down to Tampa, and the new show, because it used to be him doing the food challenges this past season, because they realized after 3 years he's probably going to die of a coronary, he had a local person do the challenges. So the second episode this past season, he went down to Tampa, and he found a local celebrity to do this challenge with these really hot, like, habanero ghost chili buffalo wings. And the guy he found? Jerry Sags.
Random.
Yes, and he did do it. He did win the challenge. He ate all the wings.
I liked the Jerry Sags cameo on Hogan Knows Best Better when they had the big WCW WWF reunion pool party.
Oh, yes. All the freeloaders and deadbeats rolled in looking for...
You know, despite of the Hogan madness that's happened in the last couple of years, I kind of wish they'd re-air that show sometimes. They used to air it a lot, like on CMT and different channels like that. I thought it had a little camp value. I don't know, especially that episode where they were all having the big pool party.
The only episode that I think I've watched from beginning to end was the weekend that he went in the Hall of Fame. I remember watching that one.
Really? I watched it pretty regularly. I didn't catch it like every time it premiered, but whenever it was on, I'd leave it on and watch it. I found it entertaining, and that was before the whole family went to shit, and Nick Scotty killed the kid in the car and all that other stuff. So, big double underhook suplex onto Jerry Sags from Scott Steiner. And Scott Steiner was just... you know, he's not what he'd become size wise, but he's pretty juiced up here.
Oh yeah, he's sweating some unusual substance.
Yeah, still got the flowing black locks here as well.
Yeah, he's got the big black mullet, and of course Rick Steiner with his big crazy mustache and his two different colored boots.
Yeah. Which Steiner brother did you prefer?
I was always a Rick fan,
really?
Actually. Yeah, I remember him when
that doesn't surprise me one bit.
Because Rick Steiner's a crazy slob. No, he's not. No, because I remember when I was watching the NWA in the late 80s, before Scott came around, Rick was actually he was a singles guy, and he was in the mid-card. He was actually former TV champion. He feuded with Mike Rotunda. I was always a big Rick Steiner fan. As a team, I was never a huge fan of them. Like, I thought they didn't do anything for me when they went to the WWF in early 93.
No?
I thought they – I saw. You know what's funny, JR, in the beginning, and I think I mentioned this in the vaults, I almost felt like they were a little out of place.
Hmm.
Just a little. And then they kind of settled in 93, and then they just kind of lost their – something happened those last – and we talk about it, and I'm sure if you go back to our vintage vaults, I'm sure we've talked about it. I feel like that tail end of 93, they kind of like lost their luster very quickly. Very weird. I don't know why, but
– well, it was one of those things where they almost waited too long to put the titles on them, and then by the time they did, they moved on to something else quickly and had them lose them. So this is kind of odd that they didn't use them more. They really should have given them the titles probably right away, I think, and then – you know, had them dominate throughout 1993. But, you know, then they're back here now in 96. So, and they had just returned to WCW earlier this year. They hadn't been around that long at this point. I think they returned in March, I believe, on Nitro. So,
speaking of Rick, he has the advantage. He's working over knobs there. Oh, Sags comes in to break up the whatever he was doing, a headlock or something, or chin lock. Tags off to Big Scotty. And guess what? Oh, we are 1 minute away.
Yes.
From hour two.
Well, I liked how they did this too. You know, they made it, everything was exciting in WCW.
Yes.
Nothing was ho-hum.
Even the little things were exciting. Yeah.
Scott with a nice overhead throw onto Dobbs now. And Scott's just been tossing the nasty ones around left and right here throughout this match. I always liked WCW's tag matches. Their formula was very unconventional. They didn't do the hot tag segment where, you know, the heel dominated the face and then you build to the hot tag. They just always kind of went back and forth, made tags and ebbed and flowed and... I don't know. It was just different, you know, different
big
style.
Spots, a lot of big spots. There wasn't like long headlocks and long rest hold kind of maneuvers, wear downs. They'd all like smack the crap out of each other. They're very stiff. Oh, Sags going to throw some little kid out of the way. Out of the way, you little shit. Grabs a chair and smacks Scotty. Oh,
ooh,
Jesus.
God, he got him good. The edge of the chair right across Scott's skull there.
Jesus, God. I'm assuming there was a DQ or something, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, we didn't really get a I think is the match still going? The fireworks. It must have always caught these guys off guard when the hour changed and the fireworks just start blowing off all over the place while they're wrestling. I think the match is still going. I don't think the ref called the DQ on that chair shot.
Let's see. Nope. According to this, he did not. So okay.
We're still going then.
All right. So We're waiting for something. Where's the head? I guess there's no fireworks. I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, right back. And
ooh.
So now we switched over to Eric Bischoff is now on commentary. Steiner with a big belly-to-belly suplex.
It sounds like Tony still. Are you sure? Did they switch?
No, I'm pretty sure it's Bischoff. Yeah, it's Bischoff.
Yeah, it's Bischoff. Okay. That's weird, huh?
Yeah, they just switched. Yeah, that's it. Hour changes. They switched the commentary team. And, of course, Bischoff, and I haven't heard yet who he's with because, of course, Steve McMichael had been part of that team. But now when he turned to go with the Horsemen in June, he left the booth. And I believe it's just probably Bischoff and Bobby here at this point. But they were up in the back where Schiavone and Zbyszko were at ringside.
Uh-oh, everybody's heads are turning. What's going on?
Are they all checking out Eric Bischoff? Steiner with another belly-to-belly suplex.
Oh, no, it's the burgeoning romance between Sherry and Colonel Rob Parker.
Yeah, it looks like they're scouting. Because now at this point, they were co-managing Harlem Heat.
Yes.
Who were the tag champions, Sister Sherry here. And now they're coming down to ringside.
Burgeoning love affair or something going on.
Yeah,
they?
They had a weird back and forth thing going on. And now she's getting up on the apron, getting involved. And Parker going to hit Scott Steiner, and he crack sags in the least obvious double cross of all time. And of course, he meant to hit the Steiners because I'm guessing Harlem Heat did not want to face them. Scott climbs over, covers sags. There's the one, there's the two, and that is it. There's the three. So our new number one contenders for the title shot at Hog Wild are your Steiner brothers.
Steiner Rick brothers. Scott. So there you go.
Well, Scott, you wanted
It's still Tony, I think.
No, it's definitely Bischoff.
No, it is Bischoff. They sound so much alike at this stretch. They still have their high, whiny voices.
All right, Scott, why don't we count down a little bit here, and maybe we'll hit our little break. So why don't you, on the count of three, we'll pause.
Okay. Let's see if there's a, see if they go to commercial. Oh, here come the late coming fireworks.
Yes, yes. We had the fire blowing before, and now we get the fireworks.
There we go. Ooh, big ones. Look at that, huh? It's hour number two.
All right. Why don't we pause here on a 3, 2, 1.
Okay. There we go. Okay. We are halfway through the July 8th, 1996 episode of Monday Nitro, the night after the most infamous heel turn in wrestling history. And now we shall take a break. And take a listen to our good friends at WrestleChat.net. Because
promotional consideration paid for by the following.
How many pro wrestling news websites do you visit to get your daily news? 3, 4, maybe 5? Do yourself a favor and make that number 1. WrestleChat.net, the only professional wrestling news site that brings you all wrestling news all day long, and is home of the critically acclaimed Still Real to Us podcast, starring former CZW ROH and ECW announcer Eric Gargiulo and the champ Jeff Peck. That's WrestleChat.net. WrestleChat, it's where it's at.
Yes, WrestleChat.net, indeed, your home for everything pro wrestling. All the news and notes you need from WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor. They have a great message board. Check out their podcast, The Champ, Jeff Beck, and his announcer. And of course, while you're perusing the site, you look to the right, you see the PTB Gnome, proudly worn by Jordan Duncan. Click on it, and you'll go to our full archive, courtesy of our good friends at Podbean. That is WrestleChat.net, indeed where it's at. Also, don't forget the history of WWE.com, our friend Grant Cawthon. Outstanding research site, ring results, DVD reviews, everything you need is there. Also, check out our show on Stitcher.com, whether you have iPhone, Android, any kind of phone or any kind of player, tablet. Go to it, you can listen to our shows anytime. And then, of course, also on iTunes. And, of course, check out our message board, Bigelow34.proboards.com. We're always talking wrestling, sports, anything you want. Check out JR's and my reviews. We talk Raw, SmackDown, all sorts of stuff. And don't forget to help out our friend Jay Womack. Still dealing with a lot of physical issues with his leg and a touch of skin cancer, but he's a fighter, and he's a great fan of the show. And if you want to help him, check the link on our board, bigelow34.proboards.com, and you can help him out. He's a great guy.
Hey, Place to Be Nation, this is Gary Michael Capetta, and this is the Place to Be Podcast with Scott Riscola and Justin Rosero.
And we are back here on the one and only Place to Be Podcast, Justin Rosero, Scott Riscola. We are in the midst of reviewing the July 8th, 1996, I butchered that, huh? July 6th.
Were you hanging out with Mongo?
Yeah, baby. July 8th, 1996 episode of WCW Night Show. Of course, one night after Bash at the Beach, we were about halfway through the show. We have just switched announcers and entered hour two of the greatest night in professional wrestling. Of course, each and every Monday, the greatest program on wrestling television. So what do you think of the show so far? Are you enjoying it?
It's been a great first hour. We've had a lot of matches, four matches, all with long-term implications. Rey Mysterio Jr., I have to be topical here.
Yes.
Is your new Cruiserweight champion. He defeated Dean Malenko in the opener. We saw Eddie Guerrero win a hard-fought match against Psychosis.
Mm-hmm.
Incidentally, Psychosis will face Rey Mysterio at the end of the week on WCW Saturday night for the Cruiserweight title. We saw the Blue Bloods defeat Big Bubba and...
I don't do any tricks.
Well, you weren't on here anyway. I'm surprised he didn't show up at some point.
Should have been.
Really? Maybe he's the one that blew the fireworks. I don't know. Maybe that's his family in the front row. And, of course, we just saw the Steiner Brothers grab the number one contender spot for the WCW Tag Team titles, currently held by Booker T and Stevie Ray, Harlem Heat, and those two will meet at Hog Wild in August. So that's pretty much what you, and a couple of promos as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that was our first hour of Nitro.
Good stuff. I enjoyed it.
Yes, very much so. Yes, top hour. So are you ready? We will begin hour number two.
All right, three.
For those that have their mice or remotes,
sorry,
get ready.
The gun there. Ready?
Yes.
All right, three, two, play.
There we go. All right, as we see the fireworks. Boy, they made the second hour fireworks a big deal, huh?
Yeah, oh yeah, they really, the big switch to hour two, you got Eric Bischoff. I still haven't heard who he's with. Is it Bobby or not?
I haven't heard another voice yet. I've just heard Bischoff's voice, which I kept thinking was Tony's, but you're right, it is Bischoff's.
No, it's definitely Bischoff.
Yeah.
I'm sure it is. I just wasn't sure if Mike Today had joined the team as well at this point. I don't think so, though. I think it's just Bischoff and Bobby.
I never heard another voice yet, so...
All right, we go down to the ring. Mean Gene's with the Nasty Boys, and I'm sure we're going to get more talk about Hulk Hogan here out of two guys that were...
pretty close.
Yeah, I mean, TV-wise they weren't, but I think they kind of say it here that they were.
Why is Sags acting like Spike Dudley?
I know, his hair's all fucked up, and he's all... I know why he's blown up. It's because he's grossly out of shape.
Well, that's true.
And he just wrestled a... How long was that match? If we're going to start doing these, I'm going to count on you to give us the official times.
Okay, the official time of that match was 6:09.
That's it, huh? Yep. You imagine, I guess when you're having a call to match live on air here, it feels a little bit longer than it is.
Yes, that is true.
You just butchered the word inevitable there.
Inevitable. Well, he's still twitching, I think.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. He's not used to cutting promos after matches. And Knobs is glad that he keeps talking, so Knobs doesn't have to. He's like, yeah, keep going, Jerry. Keep going.
Because I can't breathe anyway. I need my chicken. Oh, look at that. Sags just quoted a future WWF pay-per-view.
Yes, Gold Day in Hell.
Gold Day in Hell. He's still twitching.
What is he doing?
What's wrong with him? He's stealing Bubba Ray's gimmick from ECW. He says an interesting thing here. Huh.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he defends Hogan, what he did. That's right. Gene says they're out of their mind. And that would actually play into a storyline because the Nasty Boys would try and join the NWO in a few weeks. But they got the shit kicked out of them and kicked out, so they weren't.
They weren't material.
Right. Which kind of was surprising. I thought for sure they would put them in the way they were driving the storyline at the time. And there were rumors at the time as well that they were heading into the WWF, actually, in 97.
The Nasty Boys?
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah. If anyone had a Sushi X, used to call Sushi X hotline, that was always one of the rumors that was on every week, was that the Nasty Boys... We're going to be jumping to WWF. I'm curious how many people out there remember Sushi X.
I don't remember Sushi X. My God, more fireworks. Jesus.
I know. They love the fireworks here.
Wow.
Oh, they're
big
excited.
Second hour. Woohoo. I wonder if that was like the amusement park fireworks.
No, I don't think. Well, no, I'm sure it was for Nitro. Oh, maybe not. I don't know. Maybe it was 9 o'clock fireworks at MGM. I don't know.
Yeah.
All right, here's is this Jim Powers?
Jim Powers, yes.
Former Young Stallion.
That's right.
With all his juiced up.
Another one that's all juiced up. Wow.
I'd say we should pick the most juiced up guy, but we're not going to rip off the Review Away guys over there, John Away. They do the Scott Putzy Award winner every time they do a review. They pick the most jacked up guy. I think it may be Jim Powers, though, if we were picking this.
Here we are. That's the highlight of the second hour is right here.
This was actually a rematch from an episode of Primetime Wrestling in 1992 or 1991, I think, with Flair and Jim Powers.
There we go.
Now he's got Deborah McMichael with him. He has Miss Elizabeth and, of course, the voluptuous woman.
And what you may not have, if you're just listening to us, underneath Ric Flair's name, it says the WCW United States Champion.
What?
For the previous night at Bash at the Beach, Ric Flair defeated Conan to become the new United States Champion. The first time since September 24th, 1980, that Ric Flair held the United States Championship.
Now, do you think he looked weird with the U.S. title? Do you think it fit him?
Yes. No, it didn't. Not to me. He'll, in this era, for me, at least the last 10 years, it'll always be the big gold belt. There's nothing else he should wear.
So you don't think he should have won it?
Nah, not really. I mean, it's cool that he's got a belt. I always like seeing Rick Harry, you know, wear gold. It's the way it should be, but at least at that point. But I don't know. I feel like he's like, it's almost like 9 years later when Triple H cuts that promo about how he's settling for mediocrity. It's just, I don't know. Ric Flair should always be either nothing or the world champion, but that's okay. But yes, Ric Flair won the United States title the previous night at Bash at the Beach, defeated Conan.
Flair looking very young and youthful here. To me, this is the tail end of the Ric Flair. Once we get into 97 is when he starts to kind of morph a little bit. To me, this is the end of the Flair that kind of kicked off when he jumped to WWF in 91. You know, you had the 80s Flair, and then to me, he kind of faded during the whole issues when he was having Jim Herd, and he cut his hair really short, and he feuded with was it Tatsumi Fujinami and all that stuff.
Yep,
and then then he jumped to WWF, and to me, that's when he kind of kicked off a new look, and that continues into 96, and I feel like this is kind of the end of that Flair, the true womanizing Playboy Flair.
Yes.
They're getting clips here of him defeating Conan the night before for the U.S. title.
Woman's looking, she's looking pretty damn good, I have to say.
All three were. And, of course, Deborah now with Flair. Flair had been flirting with Deborah every week on Nitro, angering Mongo. And when Mongo turned to join the Horsemen, of course, Deborah came with him.
Yes. What if he's in the back, Mongo's in the back with the Halliburton having math class.
It's Waylon Mercy.
Yes, exactly.
I'm waiting for him to come out. Hopefully it's soon.
Jim Powers, of course, as JR mentioned, former Young Stallion. He and Paul Roma had a good little mid-card tag team in the late 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. There was a stretch, JR, that we were watching Prime Times.
I hate to interrupt, but I just want to get this out so I don't forget.
Yes.
Ric Flair defeated Jim Powers with the figure four at 227 after Mr. Perfect knocked Powers out by hitting him with a foreign object. Wrestling Challenge 4792 from Toledo, Ohio, aired on primetime on 5-4.
There you go.
My memory did not fail me.
Yes, for the second time in 4 years, they meet. What I was about to say was we went through a stretch where I was watching, you know, because we were taping the obviously 24/7 shows, and there was a five straight, I think it was summer of 87, there was like a five show stretch on primetime where the Young Stallions fought the Shadows for five straight weeks.
It was probably the same match.
Well, no, it was different venues because it was like the Houston Auditorium, wherever the heck they used to do the Paul Bosch shows, and then there was one at the Garden, and it was definitely different arenas, but I mean the matches were just
a woman get involved here, raking Jim Powers' eyes on the floor, and Powers kind of discombobulated. He is ripped.
Yeah, he looks bigger now than he obviously was in 1985, 86, 87 when they were Young Stallions were in the Survivor Series. Flair would hold the U.S. title for, I think, a good portion of the rest of the year. Actually, you know what happens? I think he gets hurt and the title is vacated. And then I think they have a tournament.
I believe you're right, yeah. And the tournament culminated at Starrcade.
Yeah, and I think trying to think who won it.
It was Eddie. Eddie and DDP were in the finals.
That's right. It was Eddie. And then he would eventually lose, I think, to Jarrett.
I know at some point by Six was in there as well. They had the ladder match.
Yeah, I know at some point Jarrett, by 97, Jarrett has a U.S. title. So that's court, right, because the sold-out pay-per-view, right? That was the...
Yes.
Yeah, that was the U.S. title. That's right.
Flair hammering on Powers with some right hands to the face and peppering him in the corner. Powers hasn't... No, no, he's chopping back a little bit. So he hasn't put up much of a fight here. Flair's pretty much dominated.
Flair was already, I mean, he was kind of in the main events in the first half of 96. He was the WCW champion. The whole, you know, that whole storyline where him and Elizabeth were spending Savage's money, which that storyline was, it was almost like a blessing for the NWO, because that storyline was just getting so stale and so played out. It was really kind of, the NWO really added some sizzle here because, I mean, look, I love Flair in the main events.
Right.
So you're not gonna argue it out of me, but that storyline was just getting so stale. Remember Savage was getting locked out of the arena and, whoa.
Flair yelling at some Spot Cohen there in the crowd. And now he dances with a woman and struts around the ring. And you know, a few things are better in wrestling than a Ric Flair squash. And now Jim Powers back to his feet and Flair's begging off.
Jim Powers with his fancy schmancy disco ball tights. Probably brought him from the Disco Inferno.
Yeah, it's like he was trying anything he could to get noticed and get a push. Like, all right, I'm going to juice up beyond belief so I look like the Warlord's little brother. And then I'm going to wear these snazzy tights and try and get noticed. Let my hair grow long. And here we go. Slams Flair off the top. I bet you didn't see that one coming.
Nope, of course not. I'm so glad that Deborah is standing in front of Art Adano there, so we'll have to keep looking. The girls are covering up the real women in the front row. Thank God.
You know, there is one woman missing from ringside with Flair. We got woman, we got Elizabeth, we got Deborah. Donnie, how come you wouldn't let me go to ringside with Ric Flair? Are you afraid it's because you would take advantage of me on Space Mountain?
Fuck you, Daddy.
I'm not afraid of Space Mountain, Daddy. I rode every ride in the park the other night.
That's for sure. I don't know, Daddy. You were at Space Mountain in the dark smoking crack, Daddy.
Daddy, you shouldn't smoke crack. It's not good for you. You should eat Twinkies and Ho-Hos. Instead, you can grow up to be like me, Daddy. Fuck you, Daddy. Daddy, how come you don't strut around like Ric Flair? He's such a cool guy with his short white hair. How come you have stringy, stringy dark hair?
Small package there by Powers.
Would you care if I change my name to Jake Roberts' daughter, Powers? Powers has been my last name.
Daddy, why couldn't you have cool tights like that Jim Powers guy? They're nice and bright and snazzy, Daddy. Fuck you. Flair was in that stretch where he really wasn't changing his tights up much. He pretty much wore red every day.
Well, he had the green, too. He'd mix it.
He did have the green, yeah. That's right. When he was champion in the earlier part of 96, he wore the green and white, green and yellow a lot. So.
Yeah, now he's got the red.
Who's this referee?
I don't know. I was thinking of that earlier. He kind of looks familiar, but I'm not sure who he is.
Yeah, Nick Patrick taking a powder here.
Yeah. Are these the only two refs I've seen all night, or Nick Patrick and this guy?
Yeah, I haven't seen Randy Anderson. What was his nickname? Squiggy? Squinky?
Pee-wee.
Pee-wee, thank you. I know he had some weird name. Pee-wee Squinky.
And now Jim Powers, just like he did 4 years earlier in 1992, taps out to the figure four. Yes.
And the time of this match, 5 minutes and 40 seconds.
Yeah, most of it was histrionics with Flair strutting around the ring and dancing with the women and yelling at the Spot Cohen in the front row.
Yeah, so we got Bruno's Pizza.
Daddy, how come you didn't give me the free tickets to go to MGM Nitro? Now here's the man. Here's Arn.
And
here's
my husband, baby.
Here he is, baby. Here's Mongo with the Four Horsemen in the briefcase. Where's my Halliburton? I got Deborah's money in there, baby.
And of course, the always awesome Enforcer. I had that T-shirt, by the way. I did have a, I did own that Four Horsemen T-shirt.
I like how Arn always had the tinted glasses on.
Yes, he did.
As if he didn't look old enough.
Yeah, those go back to those. Well, that's because he was the same ones he used to wear when he was cutting the promos in 1986.
Yes,
the same fucking glasses, I think. Ugh, styling and profiling your United States champion. And now up the ramp we go. Right, I think they're on the ramp right now.
Yeah, back to Gene. It's quite the brood they got going on here. I liked the Horsemen at this point. You know, it's not the classic Horsemen that everyone loves with Ole and Luger and Windham and all those guys, but I don't know. There's something to say about this little group they had.
Oh, I love this group. Actually, I have this poster on my wall. As you know, we got it at that show at Melrose. Mm-hmm. I have notice who's conspicuously missing.
Oh, it worked out for them. They were able to keep this in, of course, and that's Chris Benoit.
Yeah, thank God. Because, but I have this poster on my wall right now of these four horsemen: Arn, Rick, Mongo, and the Crippler. So I probably shouldn't say that.
And you know, we haven't had to talk about Benoit yet because we're not there yet in our chronology. We talk about him freely. We know what he did. We don't honor him. We don't gush about him. But we're going to mention him. We're going to talk about him because he's going to show up. You know, it's just the way it is. So, you know, don't take this as any kind of defending of Chris Benoit or the people who are like, well, you know, he was a great wrestler, but... you know, it was just whatever reason they want to give. I don't really want to get into it, to be honest with you. So I just want to let everyone know that you are going to hear us mention him. You are going to hear us just talk about him offhand. We may just make random comments about him. We're just going to talk about him like any other wrestler. We all know what happened. We don't condone it. We don't defend it. We don't do anything other than just kind of discuss him like we would anyone else. And I love this when they had the table with the champagne on it in the aisle.
Oh, awesome. Yes.
The little VIP suite. Flair now pouring the champagne, passing it around to the ladies. And he looks good with that U.S. title wrapped around his waist, dishing out champagne.
Yeah, I concur. It's starting to grow on me now. That's the first time I've seen him wear it in a while. So,
You know what?
I have to say this. While this promo's being cut, I'm officially, because, you know, no one's a bigger Horseman fan than I am. I know you are, and I know Dr. G is. But you know what? Mongo was a damn good Horseman.
Thank you. I was just about to say that.
You know, I always support Mongo as a damn good Horseman.
He gets no love. And was he garbage in the ring? Yes. But you know what? He cared. He tried. He always had a lot of energy. He was really over for a while. At the end of this year and into early 97, he got some good pops in the crowd. And he busted his ass. He worked hard. He got it. He was into it. And he was a good enforcer. You know, he's the muscle. He was just there to get his goofy lines in and do his thing. And I thought he was fine. I always liked Mongo.
I had no problem with him. I think he worked well carrying the Halliburton, being like their, you know, their unrefined muscle.
Right.
Kind of like Arn was still the pathos and the voice of reason in the group, and Rick was Rick, you know, and I officially love Mongo as a horseman. I mean, he obviously is not Wyndham or Tully or anything like that, and that's fine. Those guys served a different purpose in 1986, but you know, Mongo gets no love as a horseman. I have no problem with him. No problem with him as a horseman. Very happy. That promo just kind of cinched it for me that, hey, baby.
Yeah, he cared, you know.
Yep. Oh, there is. It is Bobby Bischoff and Bobby. So.
Did you enjoy a woman fondling Mean Gene there?
Yes. Woman was hot. She was always, God rest her soul. Woman was always beautiful. Even go back in her old Florida days. I'll have to ask Dr. G if he remembers seeing Woman at the house shows he used to go to down there in Sunrise.
Bischoff rocking the foundation of a mullet here.
Yes.
Hasn't fully developed.
No. I wonder if he was dying it at that point, or I wonder if it was going gray yet. Wow, Bobby must be sweating in that suit.
Oh, he's probably hammered.
Oh, that's true, too. At that point, he was probably drinking his freaking every time. I don't think he got as bad yet. Maybe in a couple years.
Yeah, definitely by 98, he was on the sauce pretty much every week.
Yeah, he was coasting through.
You know, I love Bobby. Not a big fan of his WCW work. He just seemed very... early on, he seemed inspired. But by this point, he was starting to get a little blah. You could tell his heart wasn't fully in it, and it was a lot of recycled, out-of-date jokes that really didn't fit in with the rest of what was going on, I thought.
Right.
And
he tells you that he wasn't totally into it either.
He admits it. So.
No. He missed WWF. But unfortunately, it was almost like Bobby was kind of in limbo, because I don't even think if he had gone back now, I don't even think he would have fit, even in WWF.
No. It was kind of an odd spot. Yeah, I'm not sure. Just time was kind of passing, but he was still talented enough that you wanted to keep him around. It's almost too bad he couldn't go away for a couple of years and come back during the nostalgia run healthy. If he came back in like 01-02, kind of when, you know, he would have fit back in again. It's almost like if he could have skipped that attitude years and the Monday Night Wars, he would have been better off.
Man, I'm still marking out over Mongo, man. I'm just so excited. I just realized how excited and happy I was to see this. Oh, wait a minute. We might have a surprise here.
Oh, yeah. We thought this match was cut.
Yeah, there's Sergeant Craig Pittman.
You know what Steve Willey was referencing? He thought this match was cut, but I forget. They're going back and re-airing these. Remember they started over again?
Yeah, but don't forget, this tape we have, it hadn't happened yet.
Yes.
Hadn't happened yet.
The one he probably watched or is watching for 24/7 was from the recent airing, not this.
Right.
This is from 2006, my tape here. So.
Yeah,
and that means our next match is Sergeant Craig Pittman along with Teddy Long versus Chris Benoit. We're going to do our best to... you know, avoid putting certain superlatives and adjectives along with Mr.
Benoit. Yeah, it's right. Yeah, what happens is a lot of the and first off, we have to just mention Benoit's face is just completely bludgeoned.
Yeah.
After the match he had the night before with did he fight Sullivan the night before?
It was him and we talked about it earlier. It was him and Arn against Sullivan and
that's
the
right.
Giant.
Sullivan and the Giant. That's right. So Benoit's a little Yeah. It was very hard after June of 2007 to try and discuss Benoit without using words like crippler and assassin.
Yeah, we'll do our best. And he is noticeably, I mean, he's still jacked, but noticeably smaller here, noticeably less wear and tear, even across his face. So Craig Pitbull Pittman, hey, he's okay. Well, a little bit of pot belly going here. And speaking of pot bellies, Teddy Long is...
he was still pleasantly plump here.
Yes, far cry from the Teddy Long of today. So he's kind of hanging around as like this manager of lower card misfits.
Hey, we have a new referee, JR. I don't know who it is, but it reminds me. Remember that grizzled, angry ref that used to be in the old WWF?
Kind of looks like him.
586. Yeah. Grizzled, unhappy. Oof,
Pittman, though, bringing the heat. It's an overhead belly to belly, and now crunches Benoit with a German suplex.
Yeah.
You know, Pittman could go a little bit. He could go.
I was talking with the Silverback, Rotellus, about Craig Pittman today. I don't know why. He always brings up the strangest guys in random conversations. But we were talking about Craig Pittman today for some reason. I don't remember why, but
Benoit back with some back elbows here, and Pittman, a guy that maybe came in a little bit too close to the turn of the product, you know. Although he got a decent push, I will say that, and they keep him around, and he's not a bad little wrestler, Pitbull Pittman.
I gotta say, JR, you know, when you look through the, I hate to belabor this point, but no, I don't, because it's one of my favorite subjects. But even with Benoit here, this might be one of the better incarnations of the Horseman overall. I really think so. A great, great quartet at this point in 96. Remember, they went through a tough patch there, you know, with Roma and random garbage going on. Look at this. This is turning.
They're slugging away at each other in the corner. Pitbull giving it right back to him. And going back. Pitbull made a guy that if he had a little repackaging, could have hung around in a different role. I'm surprised he was pretty jacked. I'm surprised he didn't get a shot with WWF at one point.
Yeah, could have gave him something. But, yeah, Benoit definitely much more trim than he would be, 10 years later.
Let's see. Pittman, he was around until end of 96, and he worked NWA a little bit, just the various promotions. He actually did some MMA.
Really?
Yeah, he was 1-1, two matches in Japan. And then that's it. That's all we have
Teddy
on him.
Teddy looks like he's lost a little bit of weight, like 94. Yeah. He really looked bad. At least he shaved his head, because in 93, 94, when he was fat and had that ridiculously bad mullet, or skullet, I guess, whatever it would have been. But he doesn't look as bad here.
No, he's still a little beefed up.
Yeah.
And, Benoit now locks in the crossface, and Pittman gives up. Oh, yeah, he's fighting. He's hanging.
Oh, he just, now Teddy Long comes in the ring.
Is he giving up for him?
I think he is. Oh, wow, he is looking pleasantly plump here. Wow, he looks like Ahmed. He looks like Moadib.
Yes, he does. yeah, Teddy Long, my brother.
Oh, my God. All right, there we go. Now he taps out. So, good night for the horse. Good night for the horseman, baby.
I don't know why anyone thought that was a good idea to have Teddy come in and give up for him. I mean, it doesn't make Pittman look particularly strong. And he's hanging in there battling, and he looks like a badass this whole match, going toe-to-toe with Benoit. And Teddy Long just kind of made him look like a bitch at the end there. So I'm really not sure what the point was there.
Yep, it's 2:43. Actually, when we were talking, JR, just to let you know, Craig Pittman was a substitute. It was originally supposed to be Benoit taking on Lex Luger.
Oh, that's right. Well, they showed Luger getting carted out on a stretcher from the night before. So
yes.
I know that song.
Oh.
A little more horseman action.
All right, babe.
All over the show.
Oh, of course. There he is. Easily, and I've said this many, many times, easily. I mean, I love Ric Flair as one of my favorites, period, but this guy right here is easily my favorite horseman of all
time.
The Enforcer, Double A Arn Anderson. The guy was just tough as a $2 stick. Hey, at least I have more hair than he did. mine was a little grayer, but at least he... at this point, even in 96, Arn was just a tough as a $2 steak. Mm-hmm. He was always put on good matches. Definitely one of the most unheralded.
He kind of goes out in the same way he wrestled his whole career, you know, just kind of unheralded. Yep. He'd get hurt in early 97 and have to wrap it up because of a neck injury that wouldn't allow him to wrestle anymore. So,
yep. More fireworks.
Yeah, I know, huh? They love
the fireworks budget was. Jesus, God.
This must have been a WC. This must have been an MG. Oh, no. That's why. It's for Sting.
Ah, Sting.
Yeah, so here comes the Stinger coming out to face Arn Anderson. These guys go way back.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Goes back to 1988 when Sting... obviously, a little history here. Sting, of course, came in that wave of UWF Mid-South mm-hmm. in 1987. And obviously, Starrcade 87, I think, was his first pay-per-view. And he definitely, you know, gained a big following. And
yes.
Then, of course, he would face Ric Flair on that first Clash of the Champions, the I don't want to say infamous, but mm-hmm. the legendary 45-minute draw. And, of course, WCW mainstay.
Yeah, he became the franchise, the face of the promotion, pretty much. And here he's kind of got this little hybrid look going on. He's still got the paint, still got the upbeat yelling and everything, but he is his hair now is grown out a little bit. It's dark. He's no longer dyeing it blonde. Doesn't have the spikes anymore. It's more of a full head of hair. Yes,
California coif there going on.
Yes, he's got the Grant Owens going on.
Yes, he's got his dark tights and lime green boots. Double A
wants a handshake.
Look at this, huh? Smack him in the face, Arn.
Now, see, this is funny because this is when we still had WCW Fuse going on. The NWO was starting up, but not full-fledged yet, where everyone would start to galvanize against them. So we still kind of have heels and faces littered throughout WCW.
So, going to the corner. Double A, a celebrated champion in many ways. Mm-hmm. A multi-time tag team champion. Many partners. A few partners, anyway. Ole Anderson. Him and Zbyszko. The Enforcers. They were former champions.
I like that tag team. That was, of course, part of the Dangerous Alliance.
Dangerous Alliance. I love that faction.
Mm-hmm.
I love that faction.
Always kind of forgotten when we talk about the great factions of the day.
Yes.
They're up there.
Yep. It was, for those that may not know, obviously it was led by Paulie Dangerously. It was Arn, Bobby Eaton, Rick Rude, Zbyszko, and Steve Austin, I think, right? Is that everybody? I think that was everybody.
Yep, and Medusa.
And Medusa. So, and that was, of course, during Flair's run in WWF, so there's obviously no Horsemen, so Arn had to find some faction to...
Yep, that was late 91 into 92.
Yes.
Kind of a slow start here, Sting wearing down, working the arm of Arn. And is this our main event, Scott?
It is. Okay. This is our last match.
Final match of the night.
Yeah, we do have something else coming up after, but what do you think of Sting's actual in-ring ability? Were you ever a big fan of it? Did you think he...
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, he knew how to work a match. He knew what he was doing. I can't say he was a technical wizard, but he was effective enough. One thing about him, though, I thought his strikes were always kind of weak. Mm-hmm. And I was probably nitpicking, but his punches, I thought, always looked kind of weak in his chops and stuff like that. But, he knew how to put together a match. He knew how to sell. He knew how to make a well-timed comeback, and I'd say he's adequate in the ring for sure. So he was, for his level and his charisma and his push, he was fine.
This is actually, a pretty good Nitro. Pretty good episode here, night after.
Yeah, a lot of good in-ring matches and, not a ton of angle development, but we've had some. We had a, big title change. We've had some promos pushing along the heel turn from the night before with Hulk Hogan. A good follow-up, coming off the pay-per-view, I thought.
Yes. Absolutely.
Not a lot of a Hog Wild build yet, though. We have the tag title set up.
Yes.
That's really it so far.
Well, obviously, I'm sure they're waiting for things to develop
before we dive
into the...
We take a break now, come back, and Sting still on the offensive, working over Arn.
Obviously, it is totally dark now.
Yes, pitch black here.
We are at night, as you can tell by the 5 million fireworks. I see there's a guy in the background on the upper deck. They're putting it away before something else blows up. He's holding like a beamer or something, or an I-beam or whatever. They obviously do less... outdoor stuff as they got into us.
There it is. Vintage Double A Spine Buster.
Yes, absolutely. One of my favorite maneuvers of all time. And mimicked by, you could tell, obviously, in WWE who he helps produce and helps as an agent, because there's at least 7 or 8 guys that do legitimately good Spine Buster. Obviously, Triple H. Batista does a pretty good one. So you can tell who was a Horseman fan back in the day, so.
Nick Patrick back in the ring here, ref in this match.
Yes, doing the main event. He doesn't have his NWO stash yet. That comes a little bit later on, his NWO stash.
Arn stomping away at Sting.
Yes. WCW would kind of arc back on the outdoor shows as time would progress. They would do it for for, you know, for like spring break, they would go. Right. But for the most part, they would end up consistently doing regular arenas going into 97, mm-hmm. you know. Yep. They didn't use the outdoor gimmick as much.
No.
Again, they would do a few weeks in, like, you know, March, April during spring break for colleges. They try to get the, you know, have the ring around the pool.
Mm-hmm.
All that kind of stuff. But there you go. There's no choke. Come on, Nick Patrick. Cut the crap. There's nothing going on there. He's not doing anything.
An okay match so far. Paint by numbers, pretty much.
Yeah, exactly. What did you think of the roster overall in 96 for WCW?
I thought it was solid. I thought they had a lot of talent now, especially with the infusion of the Cruiserweights and the Luchadors and the, you know, the guys from Japan and Benoit, Malenko, Eddie as well. So, it's growing. It's not what it would become in 97 and 98, where it was really busting at the seams.
Right.
I keep thinking that's Paul Heyman at ringside. That guy with the hat and the suit on. Yeah. He doesn't have the long hair, but he kind of looks like him from far away.
Maybe that's what's his name. Who's that idiot that in ECW though, used to wear the neck brace all the time? The hell's his name? Not Jason. Ah, crap. Anyway, that's the guy right there. And then his wife there with the.
It's gonna drive me nuts now.
The Rosati sister there with the fan on, and
I keep wanting to say Jackie Gleason, but it's definitely not Jackie Gleason. Oh, my God. What the fuck is his name? Joel Gertner.
Joel Gertner. Thank you. I was about to check our One Night Stand 2005.
Arn getting a couple of near falls here on Sting. Still nothing crazy going on.
No. We're too busy enjoying the Motley Crue there in the front row. Ooh. Sting now with a little body scissors action mm-hmm. as Arn tried to... No, but Arn turns it over to a Boston Crab. That's what I'm talking
well
about.
Well done. Well done by Double A.
Yes. Oh, look, there's Artadano. Hey, think this guy's older than me? Jeez. Wow.
That is an interesting. I take it back. That is definitely not the special needs of the front row. It's just a bunch of old people.
Yeah, it's like, I think it came from the gated community that's about 10 miles down the road.
Yeah.
Oh, here we go. There's the limo.
Is that Doc Hendricks driving the limo there?
It looks like Bill Watts right there, or Jim Watts, whatever. With the tuxedo on.
There's the limo. Who's inside? We don't know.
Jim Bob Watts.
Now we're cutting back. This is Jim Bob Watts right there on the front row. We're cutting back and forth between a Sting and Arn in the ring and the limo backstage. Arn with another near fall.
You can tell that guy there, he's got you can tell he's got a pack of like Cools in his polo.
What do you think the combined tonnage of the people in the front row are?
Oh my God, we're talking at least 12 or 14 bills.
I'd say it's about 16 to 17 LaRues.
Yeah. Oh my God. We here at Place to Be Nation, you know, people measure things in pounds or, you know, kilometers. We measure things in sugar tits.
Yes.
The crowd is 1750 sugar tits.
1750 sugar tits and 3 LaRues.
3 LaRues. Oh God. Oh, Sting with a clothesline as Arn tried to go for a double axe handle right there.
Eric Bischoff, of course, talking more about Hulk Hogan's turn for the night before.
Wow. Nick Patrick is sweating like crazy.
It must have been hot as hell there, I'm sure.
Oh, my God.
Night in Florida. I'm sure it was swampy feeling.
Yes. Kind of like it is outside here in the Northeast as we speak. There we go. We know who those guys are.
Kevin Nash.
Scott Hall.
Scott, what I'm going to try and do is once they start talking, I'm going to try and turn this up and play it. So I'm going to ask you not to speak because I think last time it didn't work out so well. So let's see if it works. And if it sounds bad, we'll cut it off.
Sure.
But
no problem.
I feel like a promo of this magnitude, we can't really do it justice. So yeah. Sting and Arn still going at it. Sting off the top with a clothesline.
There they come.
Goes to the near fall. But here they come to break up. Hall wearing his now famous jeans with the jean vest. It's kind of a half a Canadian tuxedo.
Yes.
Nash rocking the fanny pack. Put that on Jordan Duncan's list.
That's right. Nash promoting some New Jersey sports bar.
Go-Go Sports Bar.
Go-Go Sports Bar in Elizabeth, New Jersey. Wonder if it's still open.
Hey, give it a call. There's a number. Oh, now here comes Randy Savage out to defend Arn and Sting.
Yep.
We got some jacked up security. Doug Dillinger out there.
God. So that guy could ever stop anybody.
That was a pre-beard Doug Dillinger, looking kind of youthful. Sting takes advantage, the bastard that he is, hooks on the Scorpion Deathlock, and Arn is forced to submit, and so Sting wins the match amidst all this chaos at ringside. Now Savage trying to go at it with trying to go after Hall and Nash, of course, pissed off after getting screwed the night before.
Is this the place I'm thinking of? Let's see. Oh, well, if it is, oh, no wonder Nash is wearing it. Hold on a minute. Let's see where... Oh, this might be it. I don't
know. Strip club?
Pretty close. AJ's Go-Go Nightclub and Sports Bar. Secaucus, New Jersey. So it's close. That says Elizabeth.
Oh, man, there's a couple.
Yeah. The Satin Dolls. Oh, the Bada Bing. Here we go. Oh, yeah. So open 7 days a week.
Look at this guy. This is some security. He's like fucking 4 foot 11.
The little guy with the sideburns.
Kind of looks like Snitsky. All right, Gene now in the ring with Sting.
Oh, I'm just thinking this is a place that we need to take Rotellas to.
This is the guy with the mustache and mullet back there, looking good.
Oh yeah, there he is. He looks like Eddie.
That's me and Gene in the ring there, son.
Oh look, Artadano's getting excited. He's standing up for this one.
That kid right there looks like something out of King of the Hill. The fucking turquoise wife beater on.
Yes. Is that Wesley from the 93 King of the Ring?
No, Wesley has more class than that.
Yes, that's true. He's wearing shoes at least.
Sting's saying he's not surprised about what happened.
No. Nope.
With Hulk Hogan. That's a couple of people not surprised.
Mm.
Does he have a hearing aided?
No, I think it's his hair.
No, not that. Oh. I know that. See, something like
that. Oh, that thing inside? I don't know.
It's an earplug. Does he just have cauliflower ears?
Eh, probably.
So, Scott, when you said earlier Hogan's not on, is he really not on this show? I picked this thinking it was going to be like his first promo or something.
No, according to the history of WWE.com and our friend Graham Cawthon, Eddie Guerrero pinned Psicosis. Cruiserweight champion Rey Mysterio cut a promo, backstage promo on his reaction to Hulk Hogan joining Scott Hall and Kevin Nash. It was mentioned during the match, we were obviously chatting, that Hulk Hogan would appear the following week and that Psicosis would challenge Mysterio on WCW Saturday Night. So,
well, it's still a good episode. Are you surprised? I guess we'll talk about that. Are you surprised that they didn't showcase the NWO more here? Do you think it was strategic to make everyone tune in another week to see what the hell happened at the pay-per-view?
I bet you it was something strategic, or maybe Hogan just didn't feel like it.
No, I don't think it would have been that. I'm sure there had to be some reason. Because, I mean, they were in Florida already.
Ugh, Savage. Pink, not your color.
No. Yeah. He's pacing back and forth. This thing is going off and... You know, clearly taking the alpha male role here in WCW now with Hogan having turned.
Yes.
Calling out, saying the fans can't beat Hogan. Classic line here. He says, "You told the kids to stick it. No, Hogan, you stick it." And that's the end.
I believe that's the end of the...
Well, it looks like they lost power or something. As you can see, yep, and that's the end. So there you go. That is the July 8th, 1996 episode of Monday Nitro. Thoughts quickly, Scott?
Oh, I thought overall, in-ring, we had some really solid matches. We had some good storyline advancement. Rey Mysterio Jr., your new Cruiserweight champion. The Steiners, number one contenders for the tag straps. And as you mentioned, JR, we really haven't dived into the Hog Wild card yet, but obviously we haven't heard from Hulk Hogan yet. So that was obviously hanging in limbo. I'm a little surprised there was no Hogan. I'm sure that pissed off some people, but, you know,
I was definitely surprised. And I kind of liked going into the spoiler-free. I wasn't too sure about what was going to happen on the show. So I was definitely surprised. So let's quickly read through the feedback, and then we'll bring in our special guest. And, again, give us your feedback on this show. Did you like that style? I thought it flowed pretty well. I thought it was a little more cohesive than Beyond the Mat last week. So I think we're getting there. And I think by tomorrow's show, we'll announce maybe what we're going to do next week. We'll have to kind of talk it over throughout the day. Yep. All right, let's start. J.R. Cino D'Amato. I caught this recently in WWE Classics on Demand, and it was eerie seeing Woman and Elizabeth together with the Four Horsemen and couldn't help thinking about the tragic deaths.
Okay. My screen just blinked. Hold on a minute. Let me just open
this.
I can
pick it up if you want. Steve Willie.
Yeah, go to the next one. I'll be there. I'll pick it up in a minute.
All right, okay. Steve Willie. There's a gigantic shift in WCW is clearly present in this episode. Nice touch with the interviews of all the talent being asked about Hogan's turn, and especially interesting responses from the heels, ranging from apathy to respect to disdain for selling out. Two cruiserweight matches are exactly what I liked about loved about WCW this time. Malenko breaks out my favorite all-time move, the Super Gut Buster. The quality of this card is very good, with only one extended squash, unlike what we'll see later months. Odd to see that the dead wrestler count was 3-2 in favor of the women, unless John Tenta has retreated to the shock tank in the sky. And yes, he has, Steve. So there's still some old WCW hokiness with the cavalcade of senior citizens in the first row. Some guy telling the crowd when to boo. These tapings at Disney and Universal Studios are pretty cheesy, with a lot of non-wrestling fans in attendance. And shut up, Larry Zbysko. So, not a Larry Z fan there, Steve.
Wow. Okay, I have it up now. Okay. Austin Pfaff.
Mr. Pfaff.
Enjoyable Nitro. Great title match to kick off the show. This was where Nitro one-upped Raw a lot. Very good idea keeping Hogan off until the next week. Okay, curious to see what others say about that. This gives a chance to those who hadn't seen what happened to catch up, plus have people keep tuning in. Kevin Sullivan calls Benoit a madman. Yeah. Oh, and how the fuck did Jim Powers earn a U.S. title match? I don't know if that was a title match, but...
Yeah, WCW always just had title matches everywhere, so... Jay Henchy, this is one long month stretch of WCW having Nitro outdoors in Orlando, MGM, Disney, going into Hogwild in August. This is also when WCW started hitting its stride and taking over the ratings war after the NWO formed the night before at Bash at the Beach. Don't remember much from this Nitro than Rey Mysterio winning the Cruiserweight title and Hogan being kept off until the following week.
Okay. Corey Ferreira, this is when Nitro was really starting to become a great weekly show. The show does a great job selling the aftermath of Hogan's heel turn from the night before. Also, smart move by keeping Hogan off of the show to build anticipation for the show the following week. The opening Cruiserweight title match with Ray winning the belt is a great match.
Dave Hall, it's amazing that in 1996, WCW knew how to hold back and show patience. 2 years later, they're hot-shotting everything, and look what happened. Maybe Vince and boys should remember this.
Mm-hmm. I haven't get to do him in a while. Very nice. Safazio. Yes, here we go. Wow, what can I say? These moments in wrestling will never be here again, and this moment was great. Seeing Hogan, Hall, Nash walk out on Nitro wearing all black was just awesome. 3 hours of greatness, like Ray winning the Cruiserweight title from Malenko and then the tag match. I won't get into the Eddie match. It's pretty good. The Steiner's Nasty Boys is great. Comma. The Flair Jim Powers was awesome. Not exclamation points. Benoit Craig Pittman was just all right. Like, this is when Woman and Benoit were, I think, hooking up at this point. Yikes! Exclamation points. Sting Anderson was awesome. Hall and Nash came out, and all the WCW guys just started a riot like the NWO arrived, and they did it in style. It was so great.
Ed Harris.
And incidentally, Safazio, Nitro was only 2 hours.
Yes.
Not three yet.
Not yet. Ed Harris. Never really got to see WCW in its prime first run. I saw a little in 93, 94, but we did not have access to cable until 1998. But this episode really makes me long for the days of when TNT was awesome. We needed Joe Bob Briggs' Monster Vision back in our lives. We really do. So the show itself is pretty solid with a nice selection of matches, good teasing to the previous evening's events, and an overall fantastic atmosphere. Love the promos against Hogan throughout the show. You know you pulled off a real dick move in wrestling when even the heels are calling you an ass. Also nice to hear Schiavone when he actually gave a damn. He was pretty good until around 98. Nice segue to the second hour as well, pretty cool. The only issue I can find is Larry Zbysko's announcing. If you were to make a drinking game out of the number of times he used a variation of unmanly or dismisses something is not worth his talking about, your liver would leap out of your body and beat you senseless by the end of the first hour. Who the hell puts out over a heel turn by saying it's not what we're talking about? I think that was the charm of Larry. He's just a douche. Thankfully, after the first hour, we get Heenan, who does a fantastic job as usual. Odd to see him proven right, and great to see how he reacts to it.
True. BJ Moore, 1996, one of my favorite years of wrestling. Glad Scott and Justin agree that it was a great year in wrestling. The NWO and the heel turn of Hulk Hogan was, in my opinion, the top five booking decisions of all time, and what a swerve. I remember being 12 at the time and a lifelong Hulkamaniac. I had chills up my spine seeing Hulk turn on the fans. I remember thinking, how could anyone stop him? However, one of my favorites of all time was the Macho Man, rest in peace, and was hoping he would stop Hogan in the NWO. Great time in wrestling. Just overall, JR, I have to agree with a couple of our readers. We didn't really comment on it while the show was going on, but so many wonderful superstars and icons of our sport that are no longer with us, that should still be with us. It is very sad.
Yes.
It is very sad.
All right, Sean Z wraps us up here. I thought this was a pretty good show top to bottom. They had a great opener with Mysterio and Malenko where those guys really worked hard. Eddie Psychosis match was also pretty good. Eddie was always a better heel, in my opinion, until his later WWE run. Steiner's Nasty Boys are short, and were the Nasty's faces here? What the fuck did Jim Powers do to deserve a U.S. title match? Seemed like Flair thought the same thing, because it seemed like he just mailed it in for this match anyway. Sting Arn was great, and I liked the interviews at the end. Holding Hogan off a week was a good idea to build up the new Hollywood character. On a side note, how far has Heenan dropped off as an announcer? He was always my favorite in WWF, but it seems like he's totally different from WCW. He seemed very toned down. Either way, good show and a good build for Nitro. Something that would not last.
Okay.
So there you have it.
PTB Nation, as always. Nice job.
WCW, July 8th, 1996 is in the books. But the show is not yet in the books because we have a special guest. So I'm going to try and go ahead and bring him on.
Okay.
See if we can do that. And then, Scott, we do have our SummerSlam 96 vault coming up this week as well. And then next week, we'll have to decide where we want to go with the special vault.
Yes, we got plenty of options. We are working on right now. You'll see the review while I'm just letting you know while JR is sitting.
We'll keep it a surprise for now.
Keep it a surprise. We got one in the works that you'll see both. I'll just say this. You'll see one coming up on both the written on our written message board, bigelow34.proboards.com, and here on the Place to Be podcast. So stay tuned for that. But we're gonna look into what our next specialty vault will be in next week.
Hey, what's up?
Oh, sounds like we got our guest on the line. Is this Mr. Jay Womet?
What up, J.O.?
Jay, can you hear us? Yep, maybe Jay's having some technical issues.
Let's see. There we go.
He sounded good.
He sounded great. I don't know if he thinks we sound great. I don't know. Well, while he's going over that, it seems like it's 1996 week here on the Place to Be podcast.
Yes.
Because tomorrow we'll go back to our regular vintage vault. We'll have to find a special. Maybe we'll have to talk to some of our staff there, JR. Maybe we'll have to talk to our man Greenhouse, see if we can come up with a schnazzy name for our Wednesday specialty vaults. But obviously tomorrow, back to the regular vintage vaults.
Oh, we're getting some feedback now. Things are all over the place.
Oh, boy. Okay. We go back to the vintage vaults tomorrow night for about a month and a half from where we were tonight. And that is, of course, SummerSlam 1996. You still have another day or so, PTB Nation, to put in your feedback. I doubt we'll go as quickly as we did last
Probably
week.
Not.
Last week was the express line for International Incident, but obviously SummerSlam, a much fuller show, and we will do that. And then next week we'll, of course, have Mind Games. And then whatever our specialty is. Just looking ahead.
All right, I think Jay is on with us. So, Jay.
Yes.
All right, here he is, finally. Jay Womet, how you doing?
Hey, pretty good. Dying in the heat, but pretty good.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty damn warm out.
Yeah.
So, Jay, we wanted to bring you on because we talk about you all the time, obviously. Yeah. And you're a big part of the nation. Everyone loves you. Everyone loves the services you provide. So why don't you just catch us up? We wanted to give you just a few minutes here at the end of the show. Tell us about your issue. Tell us where it came from. And then let's move on to 2CW, which you also wanted to pimp.
Well, with the health issue, it started about 10 years ago. I used to wrestle and play football. Don't know if I got injured then or what happened. The leg started swelling. Doctors didn't know what it was until about 2 years ago. And that's when they started finding that it was lymphedema, which... if you go and live in Africa or one of those other foreign countries, they call it elephantitis.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's not a fun thing.
No, right? I mean, it definitely doesn't look like it between your status reports and your pictures and everything else. It seems like a hell of a time you're having battling this. And now, so you went, you had it checked out and doctors could not diagnose it. Is that what happened?
Well, being a bigger person, they kept wanting to go with, it's the diabetes and all this and that. But every time they do blood work, I proved them wrong over and over, and they didn't want to hear nothing about that. So I switched to a doctor that actually wanted to do testing for other stuff aside from just the usual, and that's when they found out that it was lymphedema.
And now, of course, things have kind of gotten worse from there, right?
Big time, because while I was in the process of seeing the doctor, the insurance was denying me all sorts of treatments. They didn't want me going to the lymphedema specialist or nothing, and the leg kept getting worse and worse. And finally, last August is when the leg turned to what it looks like today.
Oh.
And I just got to the point where I told the doctor, I don't care what I got to do. I just cannot continue like this.
Right.
And so for the last year, I've been battling the insurance and battling the health issues.
And now you have developed, too, a slight battle with skin cancer from this as well, correct?
A very good chance. They just tested me, and on the 28th, they're going to remove the two, they call them rogue moles, and test that. they did find out that the some of the treatments that they were giving me was actually making the leg worse than better. So you add that into the equation. Yeah. So, but I figure, you know what? Quitters lose. I'm not going to lose.
Right. I mean, and that's really what endears you, I think, to both Scott and I and a lot of the nation. I mean, for all the hell you've been through and you continue to go through, not only just the physical issues, but also dealing with the insurance companies and everything else. And your attitude is just amazing. You stay so positive and you really seem like you know, you're geared up to beat this thing and become quite an advocate for it as well. So, I mean, that's inspiring, Jay.
Well, I definitely want to do that. And that's kind of why last October is when I originally started coming up with the webpage, Leg Up on Lymphedema. And we did a small benefit back in December to try to raise the funds to get shoes for me to have for winter because I cannot wear like regular shoes with the way the lymphedema is in my leg and stuff. So I have to buy special order ones and the cost is outrageous.
Jeez.
Oh. Now, Jay, is there a concern now? It's your right leg, right?
Left leg.
Okay. Is there a concern that, not to get too medically technical, but there's no concern that this lymphedema could spread to your other leg, right? Is it centralized in your left leg or is there right hopefully now, not a concern that whatever you have could actually move to other parts of your body? We're crossing our fingers it doesn't, but I'm just curious.
There's always in the medical field, like my doctor said, there's always concern that it can move elsewhere. But one thing we found is that my body is retaining a lot of the lymph fluid in other areas, but it's also going, it's not like pulling up the way it did in the left leg. It goes in and out of my body, so that's a plus, but there's always a concern, but the way I see it is what it is. I'll fight it no matter what.
Well, we here at the podcast and all of our listeners on the page, we're always rooting for you. And whether you're religious or not, Jay, I'm a member of the Knights of Columbus, and I always after our meetings, I kind of stroll around and I go into our church and I do light a candle. So I
appreciate everything because I'll take any and all vibes, good, whatever can be sent my way because this, like my doctor and me talked about last week, this is going to be a long time battle. It's not going to be something that even with the surgery, depending on what they find out, it's not going to be something that could be cured in like a 6 week period.
Right.
So I need all the vibes, all the whatever. So anything and everything is appreciated by everybody.
And you know, we encourage the nation to keep not only supporting you financially, however they can, right, but also spiritually and mentally as well. You know, give you that positive reinforcement. Like you said, you're always looking for videos of your heroes in wrestling, kind of getting things done, taking care of business. So, we try and build this PTB Nation into a family, and I think it's become that. And we all take care of our own. So we're all here for you, Jay.
I appreciate that.
You know, we're all trying to do what we can to help you out. Why don't you tell us a little bit about another passion of yours, and that is 2CW, an independent promotion in your area.
I've got a lot of friends that got me interested in it, and the first show I went to was actually at the Onondaga County War Memorial, and from there I just got hooked. I started going to the shows, meeting some people, and they are some of the nicest people. Back in December, several of the guys actually helped out with the benefit, and they're always asking about me. Every time I go to the show, they come up, want to find out what's going on, and make sure everything's okay health-wise, and I appreciate everything that they've done. And in fact, I'm getting ready for their summer tour coming up. It starts this Saturday night in Binghamton.
Are you attending that one?
I go to all the shows.
Okay,
I
cool.
I go to all of them.
Good.
It's show 75, and it's headlined by Tomasa Ciampa versus Rhino.
Okay, cool.
Wow, nice.
Yeah. I mean, they bring in a lot of big-name independent wrestlers. They bring in some WWE Hall of Famers.
Mm-hmm.
They bring in, I know, like, in July 13th in Watertown, they got the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, coming in. They've got Rachel Summerlin, one of the best women workers on the indie market right now, and she will be taking on Mickie James.
Oh, wow, good.
Yeah. Eddie Edwards is taking on Chuck Taylor.
It's our buddy Eddie.
Yeah.
Our buddy Eddie.
Now, Jay, what kind of crowds do they usually draw? Do they do well?
Oh, they do very well. Binghamton crowd is almost like being at the old ECW arena.
Oh,
so
cool.
It's always a fun time for them. The Watertown crowds are usually very good. Syracuse at Passham Athletic Club is a smaller venue, and that's more like intimate. They're doing a show August 3rd, headlined by Sammy Callahan versus John Morrison.
Cool.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It's already just about sold out for that show. And then August 4th in Rome is a smaller hockey arena, and that they were just there in April, and that was sold out. And they've got Diamond Dallas Page coming to the Rome show.
Nice,
excellent! So. Wow, they really get some good. They get some good guys coming in,
and the talent that they have is amazing on their own. Jay Freddy, the former champion, Isis FX. I mean, they're really good guys.
That's great, and it's good to hear. You know, you not letting this thing keep you down and keeping you locked in the house and. You know, I'm sure you have your moments where you're miserable and pissed off at the world, it's good to see you out there, you know, living and going to something that you care about this much. And I'm glad to see that they accept you in that way, too, that they bring you in and they care and they check in. That makes other people, you know, want to do stuff like that and want to be involved. So anyone in the area, it sounds like it's mainly upstate New York, Western New York. Check out 2CW. You may run into Jay, and you guys can chat about your extensive wrestling collection. Jay, before we let you go, tell us, how the hell did you amass this collection?
I just started out back in the day being a videotape collector and trader, and it just expanded. And then I got files with the WWE Classics, started adding that, and then I started finding stuff I didn't even know existed, and people wanted classics on demand, they couldn't get it due to a lot of cable systems, so it just worked out. And now I just made a deal with a woman in Florida where I will be getting her massive collection.
Awesome. Yeah, I saw you talk about it on the Facebook page. And
There's stuff that is unbelievable. She believes she has the original Mad Dog Buzz Sawyer versus Tommy Rich steel cage match.
Oh, nice. Wow. She must have quite the collection. Maybe we'll have to get her on, too. We'll all chat about tape collection.
Yeah, really? Wow.
All right, Jay, we've been going late here, so we're gonna wrap up a little bit. But we want to have you back on to actually do a review with us, because I think we'd have a great time just bullshit about wrestling with you.
Oh, absolutely. Sure.
So everyone check out Jay's Facebook page, Leg Up on Lymphedema. All his information is on our Facebook page at the Place to Be Podcast. It's also all on our message board at bigelow34.proboards.com. Jay, as you can tell right here, is a great dude. Needs your help. There's different ways you can help him out, so please visit us there at the message board or on his Facebook page for details. Jay, we want to thank you for coming. Thank you for joining us here for a few minutes. We'll have you back on soon. Scott, we're going to wrap up. We'll be back tomorrow night to talk SummerSlam 96. And also, details on the PTB Trivia Contest are coming out. There is the thread on the message board. You can sign up for that there. Winning a prize will be an appearance on the show and some DVDs from our buddy Jay. So check that out. It's going to be stiff competition. Start studying now. These questions are not going to be easy. So I think we got 18 or 19 people in already. And the questions, Scott and I have been racking our brains coming up with these questions. They're going to be tough ones. So. With all that said, for Jay Womet, our buddy Scott, I am Just Rosero. We'll talk to you tomorrow night. Thanks for listening.
Peace.
The finger, the word best is driving my life. To name my daughter my strength, my son the star will be my resurrection. Born in correction, all the wrong shit I did, he'll lead in right direction. How you live in large or broke, charge cards are mediocre. You're flipping coca, playing spit spades and strip poker. It's yours. It's mine. The world is yours. It's mine. The world is yours. The world is yours. City band.
standard. Hold myself down single-handed. For murder raps, I kick my thoughts alone. Get remanded, born alone, die alone. No crew to keep my crown a throne. I'm deep, I sound alone. Cave inside 1,000 miles from home. I need a new nigga for this black cloud to follow. Cause while it's over me, it's too dark to see tomorrow. Trying to maintain, I flip, feel the clip to the tip. Picturing my peeps, now the income make my heartbeat skip. And I'm amped up, they like to champ up. Even my brain's in handcuffs. Headed for Indiana, stabbing women like the Phantom. The crew is lamping Big Willie style. Check the chip to smell. Plus I profile well. Stash through the flock clothes, burning dollars to light my stove. Walk the blocks with a box. Checking Danes plus the games people play. Bust the problems of the world today.
It's yours.
It's mine, it's mine, it's mine. Whose world is this?
The world is yours. The world is yours.
It's mine, it's mine, it's mine. Whose world is this?
It's yours.
It's mine, it's mine, it's mine. Whose world is this?
The world is yours. The world is yours.
It's mine, it's mine, it's mine. Whose world is this?
Everybody in Queens, the foundation. The world is yours. To everybody uptown, yo, the world is yours. The world is yours. To everybody in Brooklyn, y'all know the world is yours. The world is yours. Everybody in Mount Vernon, the world is yours. Long Island, yo, the world is yours. Staten Island, yeah, the world is yours. South Bronx, the world is yours.